Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in a tub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Arizona Congressional Representative Raul Grijalva, co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, going to be here talking about the people's budget. You know, we've been hearing an awful lot about Paul Ryan. We've been hearing an awful lot about the Deficit Commission. We've been hearing all of these ideas where the frame is hell-bent on pain, that it's hell-bent on taking things from the working class, making those at the bottom suffer. That's what the key here, I think, for the radical right is, to take back all of those gains of the 20th century. And look, they've been against everything, every progressive step forward, every advancement for working people forward. The Republican Party has been steadfast against. So repealing the 20th century for them would be mission accomplished. And they wouldn't need a big sign over their head or a sock in their drawers. They would just have a big bulge there anyway. They would be so happy. So when we talk with our Arizona representative, a little bit about the people's budget, the idea that, you know, maybe we can do some sane things, some rational things, cut some places that can be cut, raise some revenue where it needs to be raised, but do the things that we need to do, bring the deficit in line, of course, but do it in a smart fashion, with the idea that we don't need to slash and burn, we don't need scorched earth. We need to maintain Social Security. We need to maintain Medicare. We need to maintain these institutions that people are very happy with and that work really, really well. So we'll talk to him in the next segment. Also tonight, University of Pittsburgh professor Conrad Daniel Voles, he's going to be here talking about the Marcellus Shale protest that happened yesterday. Some information on his research. Is this drilling? Is this good stuff? Is this what's going to be the next boom here in Pennsylvania? Or is it going to destroy our drinking water, destroy our environment, and change this state in a way that in 20, 30 years we're going to look back and regret? We're going to talk to him and find out about that. Also, Pennsylvania Democratic Party Chairman Jim Burns is going to be here to talk about Tom Corbett's first 100 days. The frame here in Pennsylvania is kind of interesting. You know, and I'm still... on my mind, the Tribune review piece, the conservative wave just missed Pennsylvania, just went right on by. You know, went from Wisconsin to Ohio, right on by to New Jersey, and then up to Maine and New Hampshire, went right by us. We missed it because we have such moderate, pragmatic Republicans. Yeah, okay. And our bridges and our roads aren't crumbling. All spick and span, brand new stuff. Our education isn't being cut by $1 billion. Don't worry. Go back to American Idol and Cheetos. Go on. In the third hour, David Briggs from the United Mine Workers of America is going to be here talking about this being Workers' Memorial Day and some of the tragedy that has happened to miners in this country, not just in history, but within the last few years. I think of the Upper Big Branch mine disaster, the explosion there that I think could have been prevented. And we're going to talk to him about that. And I'm questioning why Don Blankenship isn't a guest of the state. Why is he not behind bars? Why is he not incarcerated? Because the reality is, you know, like the sign to my right says, you know, why is it that the only right that's freely given to us is the right to die? Why is it the only right given to us on the job freely is the right to die? If I want to kill somebody, I think I should just hire them, make them my employee, and put them in the worst conditions. Be as negligent as I can possibly be, because I know the fines are going to be minimal. I know that there'll be virtually no possibility of a criminal prosecution. We get 12 people who die every day in this country on the job. Those are numbers you can't fudge. Every day, 12 people. Now, it's better than it used to be, and you got to give credit where credit is due. It's better than it used to be. But still, 12 families every day. 12 people got up, went to work today, and didn't come home. 12. And this year, being the 100th anniversary of the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory, 146 young women burnt to death or thrown themselves out of an eighth-floor window to escape the flames. Why? Because no regulator went in there and said, you can't chain those doors shut. So while the last 40 years, the history of the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, the last 40 years have been getting better, every year a little bit better, progress, we still got a long way to go. And the injury numbers that we see, they say a little more than 4 million people got injured last year. I think that's way off. Because we know in a lot of these right-to-work states and a lot of these at-will states like Pennsylvania, if you don't have some protection, you break your arm or you injure yourself in some way, the boss says, well, just go home and take care of it. We're not going to report it. Because if you do, probably going to get fired. Oh, but that doesn't happen. Doesn't happen. 50,000 people, they estimate. 50,000 people a year die of occupational diseases. It's amazing to me. And why? Why don't we stand up for ourselves? Why don't we fight back? You know, in this country, we have the ability through collective action. And I'm not talking about the laws on the books, because we got plenty of laws on the books. Problem is half the time you get these radical folks in office, these corporatists in office, both on the Democratic and Republican side, who say, you know what? We need to be business friendly. We need to be a little more business friendly, which means those job killing regulations, we need to not enforce those. And I ask, what about the worker killing lack of enforcement or the worker killing lack of regulation? You don't hear much about that. All we hear is that the politicians and the big lobbyist firms, oh, job-killing regulations. Yeah, you know what? I think those 29 miners, I think they wished that someone would have regulated that a little bit better. I think the 11 men and women lost their lives on the BP rig probably wished an inspector would have done their job, because they might be here today. So we can have all of these rules on the books. What we need is collective action. What we need are people who are going to say, hey, don't do that. Or, hey, you need to fix that. You know, when I drove a truck for a number of years, and I didn't need the DOT to tell me that when the brakes were out of alignment or the air hoses were leaking, or you saw something dripping from the engine, you saw antifreeze pouring out of it or oil pouring out of it, that you get it fixed. When you saw, you know, the brakes needed an alignment, you went and you got them fixed. But you know what? I've got friends who drive truck for non-union companies. They go in and tell the boss, hey, you know, it's out of adjustment. I don't worry about it. Take it. We'll fix it when you get back. And they say, well, no, I can't do that. You want a job, don't you? Happens all the time. And I'm sure it's happened to you at some point where you've done something where you go, man, I got lucky this time. Probably shouldn't do that again. Which is why I think we all need to make safety and really community job one. To protect our neighbors, to protect ourselves. That's it for me. And we do. We need to take to the streets. We need to take to our coworkers and talk to our neighbors. Because it's not job-killing regulation that I'm worried about. It's worker-killing lack of regulation. Anyway, today on the big program, that's what we're going to be talking about. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Had the big worker memorial day today. The miserable weather this morning, just horrible. And I hope everybody got home, all the workers got home today safely, because it was pretty bad environment to be out working in, especially if you were working on power lines, because one of our friends, he said, you know, the neighbor's trampoline was up in the, you know, in the telephone wires, and then the electrical wires up off the way up off the ground. You go, that big trampoline? Yeah. Somebody had to go get that. That was somebody's job. So we hope everybody got home safely today. But today was the day we thought about the folks that have come before us, the folks who have passed on, people who have been injured. And, you know, I thought about some of the injuries that I've had over the years while working. And I remember the first time I ever got hurt on the job. I was working for the city that I lived in as a college student on the back of a garbage truck. And I came off the back of the garbage truck in a pothole, and I twisted my ankle pretty good. And, you know, the foreman just said, yeah, you should go home. Take a week off. And I took a week off. I didn't know any better. I was a young kid. I healed up, week, back to work. Lost a week's pay because of that. They weren't nice and said, here's a week's pay now. Or here, come in, do something else. No, it was, hey, we don't need you anymore. And that was a wake-up call for me very young. To realize that, you know what? You've got to have someone who's willing to stand up for you. Someone who's going to fight for you. In that situation, it was, you're at will. We don't need you here. We got there 100 other people behind you. Next, which is what I think happens an awful lot, which is why we need greater enforcement, which is why we need better oversight. And to be honest, even the workers' comp system that we have is broken. The whole idea of the Great Compromise, that as a worker, your constitutional rights have been taken from you. The idea that you can no longer sue for damages, to me, again, this Great Compromise that they made, that I can't sue my employer or sue anybody in the course of employment because I have given up my right in exchange for some economic security that I'll be taken care of in the event that I can't work. Yet we see time and time again, as these rules start off with good intentions, they're whittled down, watered down, loopholes here, special exemptions here, to where at the end of the road, the guy who got hurt is the guy who's the one paying the freight. He's the one suffering in all of this. And those are the days I think we need to change. So today's the kind of day where we talk about things like that, and had a great event today down at Laborers Grove. They had a nice memorial, and we had a nice rally at the Capitol. So thanks for everybody who came out. It was great seeing people. And again, today we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff. The budget, Corbett's education budget, Marcella Shale, especially in the news big, but especially in the next segment, the people's budget. We take a break. We'll be back with Raul Grijalva, U.S. Congressman from Arizona. Back after this.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. International Association of Firefighters President Harold Schaikberger says the union is turning off the spigot of millions of dollars to federal candidates and federal political parties because politicians aren't doing enough to stand up for labor in the face of intense attacks. Schaikberger says not only are extremist Republicans trying to destroy unions, but too few Democrats are standing up and fighting for firefighters and other workers.
That is now a coordinated and an organized effort by the far right to simply try to eliminate a significant portion of America's labor movement. Our congressional friends need to finally stand up and step out and be willing to fight back on our behalf with the same kind of commitment and focus and ferocity that the opposition, the enemy, has shown in their assault on America's workers and on our unions.
President Obama told Cleveland's WKYC-TV that he strongly opposes attacks on public workers in Ohio, Wisconsin, and elsewhere around the nation.
Let's make sure that we've got shared sacrifice. We make sure that the burden doesn't just fall on one set of folks. Let's certainly not blame public employees for a financial crisis that they had nothing to do with. And let's not use this as an excuse to erode their bargaining rights. Whether it's Wisconsin or what we're seeing in Ohio, I strongly disapprove.
Today, we remember the thousands of workers killed each day at work and the hundreds of millions hurt each year. Jesse Russell has more.
Today is Workers' Memorial Day, an annual day set aside to remember workers who have been killed or disabled due to employment. This day of remembrance started in Canada in 1984, spread to the United States in 1989, and has since been embraced by countries around the globe. The International Labor Organization calls April 28th the World Day for Safety and Health at Work, and released the following statistics. Worldwide, 337 million people annually are victims of workplace accidents. 2.3 million die annually due to injuries or work-related illness. There are 6,300 workplace deaths daily. One of the leading causes of workplace fatalities are hazardous substances. Asbestos alone is attributed to the loss of 100,000 lives annually.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and by the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, Iron Ship Builders, Blacksmiths, Forgers, and Helpers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your working class radio experience.
Where hard work, common sense, and rational thought
are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left. Rich and robbery. Bought a shirt, left a cameo. Blue dental, head is vape.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, if you want to contact me, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. You know, what gets me is, you know, here's the problem. The frame that the mainstream corporate control media has taken is that we have this great big out-of-control spending problem that's grown so out of control that we need to have these radical measures. We need to do the most drastic of things because we are in dire straits. Times are just, it's just amazing that we can do nothing else. We have to dismantle Medicare. There's just nothing else we can do about it. We have to dismantle Medicare. The other part of it is Social Security. Sorry, we can't do it anymore. We're going to have to reform our Medicare system or our Social Security system. Going to have to do it. Sorry. Or like former Wyoming Republican Senator Alan Simpson says, we need to make it work like it used to. You know, back when the average person lived to 57 and we had the retirement age at 65. So basically you were dead several years before you were eligible. Reform. You know, like it used to be. And I love how all of this belt tightening, I love how all of this shared sacrifice, we're all in this together, all of this rhetoric that our Republican friends keep using. Yet it appears from everything that I see that the only belt tightening that's going on is mine and yours and your children's. The only sacrifice that's happening is ours. I don't see them asking the very wealthy to contribute. I don't see them asking the billionaire class to maybe give up the sixth yacht or the seventh home. I don't see that. What I see is, well, we need to push that retirement age off several years, and we need to make sure that we dismantle Medicare. We'll give you this voucher. Here, would you like a voucher with nowhere to go? You know, my grandmother right now is in the hospital, and she's in rough shape. She's got a bunch of problems. She's 80-some years old. She's got a bunch of problems. She is absolutely, unequivocally uninsurable. There is not an insurance company on this planet that would consider insuring her right now. Nobody. Except you and me. Except we the people. Except our government, Medicare. Now, when we keep hearing this beautiful flowery language, we're going to give you a voucher. You're going to have choice. There's going to be competition. Really? How much competition do we have now? Not an awful lot. Where would my grandmother go with her magic voucher? Nobody will take it. Nobody. She's been in the hospital 3 days now. And to be honest, she's had 80 tests. And the list of problems, lengthy. Where do you think she's going to go? Think about your grandparents. Think about your parents. Hell, think about yourself. Where are you going to go with this magic, with this winning ticket? Truth of the matter is, you're not going to go anywhere. And that's the point. That's the point in all of this. Going back to what Simpson said, we're going to reform it to where it worked like it used to where you're dead 7-8 years before you were eligible. Good reform. You know, they keep saying that life expectancy keeps going up. Yeah, the people who are doing very well, the folks who have lived very comfortable lives, who have had quality health care all of their lives and never missed a beat, have had yearly checkups and preventive care, they're going to live to 100. The guy who busts his behind swinging a hammer or building houses or working in a factory or, heaven forbid, picking up garbage, those are the people who are going to live very short lives. Because they're not going to get the same kind of care. You know, I love when people say, well, we've got the best health care, got the best health care in the world. And I agree, we do. We have the best health care in the world, if you can afford it. My grandmother, she's in one of the best hospitals in this country. She's in the Cleveland Clinic. World-renowned Cleveland Clinic. Princes from Saudi Arabia come to the Cleveland Clinic to have work done. Without Medicare, mark my word, without Medicare, without that ability to pay, and for those hospitals to know that they're going to get paid, my grandmother doesn't get anywhere near there. They don't do 88 tests to find out what's wrong with her. Is this the direction we want to go? And this isn't the conversation we're having. The conversation that has to be had is our future going to be? The Republicans keep saying, well, you know, it's not going to affect you people right now. You know, the greedy geezers that Simpson has labeled you, the folks who are retired now. They're planning on and they're praying that you will be that label, that the people 65 and older will be those greedy geezers. They're hoping for that. They're praying for it. In fact, their policy is based on it. And I think they're shocked and surprised that you haven't gone, well, it's not going to affect me. Screw them. Problem is them. Those are their kids, their grandchildren. I guess the Republicans don't really understand family values very much, do they? When parents will say, well, I've got mine. Sorry, kids, you're on your own. Because that's what this Ryan budget does. It divides college kids and grandmothers. It pits them against each other. Because the Republicans are masterful, absolutely masterful, at pitting people against each other. They're just amazing at divide and conquer, because they've sliced and diced this country into very, very small segments, to where they can pull your chain anytime they want. Because we've isolated ourselves. We've got our computers. We've got our idiot boxes at home. We drive by ourselves in our car. And we've become this isolated society. They've told us we're individuals. They've pushed this libertarian ideology on us that we're an island. We're of by ourselves. This Horatio Alger vision of ourselves. But here's the problem. When you're 20 years old and when I was 20, I was invincible. I was bulletproof. In my mind, I'd whoop anybody's behind. I'd take anything on. I didn't need to go to a doctor. I could drink all night. I could stay up all night, stay up for weeks at a time, partying, carrying on. I was invincible. I would have bought into that. Hey, I'm individual. I'm a tough guy. I can take anything. But you know what? You grow up and you realize that as you get older, you're going to need health care. You grow up and realize you're going to need a little security to make sure that those kids behind you are taken care of. You wake up one day and you realize, you know what? I'm not that 20-year-old kid. I've got responsibilities. I got to make sure that my kids are taken care of. So if I get hurt on the job, someone's there to make sure that I can fulfill my responsibilities to my family. Again, our Republican friends don't seem to get that family value thing that they keep throwing in our face. By tearing down workers' comp, by tearing down unemployment, by tearing down the safety net of this country, by destroying Medicare, by taking Social Security and wanting to gamble it in Wall Street. Haven't we learned our lessons yet? Have we not figured this game out? This is the exact stuff they've been doing to us since the beginning of time. And yet, we still fall for it. Because they do, man. They make great arguments. Simplistic arguments. You don't want to pay for those poor people who made bad decisions when you made good ones. You don't want to pay for those people who just popped out a bunch of children that were illegitimate when you planned. Never mind all of the social ills that come up by having that mentality. Never mind what happens to your family in an environment like that. Never mind any of that. It's not important. What's important is that you buy into that bizarre frame that we don't need each other. But what I find interesting, while they're pushing the Horatio Alger theme out there, you're the individual, you're the single most important entity, they push their religion, which is kind of weird, because religion is a joint thing. It's a community thing. And if how I was raised, social justice, peace, community, back when the Catholic Church, I think, had some conscience, they wouldn't be able to use that. I find it interesting how they've perverted the religion even to say that, you know, Jesus wants you to be rich. And you can have an individual relationship. Again, dividing us even in our religion. But these are the family values, people. Amazing stuff. Anyway, we're having a little trouble getting Arizona Congressman Raul Grijalva. Hopefully everything's okay. Hopefully we'll be able to get back with him in a little bit. But this budget I do want to talk about, if we can get through to him. Again, it does a lot of the things that need to be done. And it protects Social Security. It protects Medicare. It protects our institutions. And it makes sure that we balance the budget. In fact, it eliminates deficits and actually creates a surplus in 10 years. What I like about it is it puts people back to work. It has a Make It in America jobs program, which I am just 100% behind. And again, we got to get out of Afghanistan and Iraq, and it does that because you know what? You want to know where our spending problems are? And I've said this before. We do have a spending problem. It is a Paul Ryan spending problem. We gave away a boatload of money to people who didn't need it, and we fought two wars that we shouldn't have been in. A boatload of money that we've spent, three decisions, goodbye to a lot of money. And now we've got to tighten our belts, and I've got to suffer because they made bad decisions. They say that the budget, this people's budget, is fair by fixing America's inequality responsibly. Look at that. The Democrats can actually come up with one of those little acronyms that makes sense. I love that. FAIR, fixing America's inequality responsibly. And they talk about balancing the budget by 2014, a budget surplus by 2021. Smart things. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
A recent email to me pretty well sums up the big budget hullabaloo being pushed by Tea Party Republicans. As the writer put it, remember when teachers, public employees, Planned Parenthood, NPR, and PBS crashed the stock market, wiped out half of our 401ks, took trillions in bailout money, spilled oil in the Gulf of Mexico, gave themselves billions bonuses, and paid no taxes? Then he added, yeah, me neither. Yet, it's teach the middle class, the poor, the elderly, the environment, and the idea of public service that GOP Congress critters and governors want to punish for the destructive deeds of Wall Street banksters and corporate elites. For example, the GOP's widely ballyhooed budget plan doesn't just end Medicare as we know it, it ends it, period. Instead of extending this efficient and effective health care program, they would toss the elderly under the bus of insurance profiteers. Goodbye and good luck. How's this for bitter irony? Last year, Tea Party Republicans got elected to Congress by falsely claiming that Obama's universal health care program would require, quote, massive Medicare cuts. And now, those same Tea Partiers are not merely voting to cut Medicare, they're killing it. They're also trying to gut Medicaid, taking $750 billion out of this essential health care program for poor families. Would this savings help reduce the deficit, as they claim? No, it would merely be redistributed to the super-rich in the form of $1 trillion in new tax giveaways. This is Jim Hightower saying the GOP budget plan shows who they are and whom they serve. As one observer says, it's a measure of just how far off the deep end Republicans have gone. That's former President Ronald Reagan's budget director speaking. And we all remember what a lefty Reagan was.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Well, I know that somewhere down inside there's feeling small and scared.
The advice I give you, if you do, hold on to your wallets, because I got to tell you, this whole frame that I keep hearing, we spend too much, we need to cut, this scorched earth budget that Ryan has put out, we're going to destroy Medicare, so that my grandmother, who's in the hospital right now, as I said, will have nowhere to go, because I think that at the end of this, that's the game plan. But, you know, this budget to me, again, scorched earth, and it is what they do. I've been asking, why isn't there a rational budget? Something sane, something rational, where sacrifice is actually shared. Not just a bumper sticker that you can, not just one of those slogans, but actual reality. So when I found the people's budget, I said, hey, this might be a good idea. So I've asked Arizona Congressman Raul Grijalva. He is the co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, to come talk to us about the people's budget. Representative, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you for inviting me. You're right. I think the contradictions that are going on in America between the Ryan budget, between the half-stepping of the Democrats and what the Progressive Caucus put down as a marker about how to handle this economy, how to take care of people, and how to reduce the deficit with the right sources, I think is an absolutely good comparison that the American people have a right to look at and have a, and long-term are going to have an opportunity to choose.
You know, back in November, the Republicans ran on this plan that we're going to cut spending. And they ad nauseum, they ran, cut. Here in Pennsylvania and in a lot of states across the country, we're seeing massive, massive cuts to education. On the national level, they're talking about destroying Medicare. And I don't think the people who voted in November voted for those kind of cuts. They think that, and I think most voters and most of my friends believe that you guys there in Washington and here in Harrisburg, there's this office with a gold-plated door that says the Department of Waste, Fraud, and Abuse, where you just go and burn money.
That door is real, but it's not substantive. It's a phony door. You can keep, you know, and as long as the target for that kind of mentality is a very restricted group of programs, and we leave the military alone, we leave Homeland Security alone, we leave subsidies, tax subsidies for oil and gas. We are making record profits this quarter. Exxon and Shell are going to make record profits, $60 billion, and still getting $40 billion in tax subsidies, corporate loopholes. You know, I think the American people are beginning to look at the issue of fairness.
Which is why we have to have the discussion. But my problem is what the right is masterful at doing is scaring the hell out of people. I want to play a clip of one of your colleagues, Representative Alan West. Listen to what he had to say here.
I'll tell you something. If you support Medicare the way it is now, then kiss the United States of America goodbye.
So basically, we're scaring the hell out of people. If you support Medicare, goodbye, America.
No, and it's slogans without substance. And I think one of the things that Democrats have done in a very bad way is that we've become defensive about what the things we believe in, and we've become reactive to the things that they do. You know, the people's budget is about offense. The people's budget is that we have an agenda too. We're going to preserve the things that are important to the American people, and we are going to get revenue from the things that are exploiting the American people. Simple as that, not a very complicated equation, and guess what? We create a surplus and reduce the deficit by 2021. We begin to bring down the national debt to 64% by that same year that no other budget, including Ryan's budget, even approaches. The Van Hollen budget, which is the Democratic budget, doesn't even approach that. And why did we do that kind of aggressive look at the budget? Because the American people want things dealt with, but at the same time, they want things taken care of.
Absolutely.
And they want to balance it. So the subsidy, the taxes for the biggest 2% rich, the corporate loopholes, military spending. For the first time in three decades, the American people are saying, not by a huge majority, but enough of a majority, to say, look at military spending. Significant.
You know, here's what I've been saying from the beginning. I do believe on something we do have a spending problem, but I do believe our problem mostly is on the revenue side. You look at the tax rates that have fallen off the charts the last 10 years at least, but steadily declining since the Reagan years. Only during the Clinton years when he actually raised taxes did we have a booming economy. And I look at Jan Schakowsky's Fairness and Taxation Act.
It's an excellent act.
And I say that's where we start.
You know, and Jan's legislation is fully incorporated into the people's budget as a wonderful piece of the Millionaire's Tax Act. Here's what's happened. What Ryan and the Republicans did and the ideological right did is they're replicating what's happened for the last 9 years and saying it's okay. Let's codify it. Let's make it permanent. And in fact, let's reduce more of the taxes for corporations, the rich, and open up and increase the loopholes for corporations. In the interim, that is what caused our deficit, and now we're replicating that. So 10 years from now, a generation from now, if the Ryan budget were to hold, we have made a generational shift from fairness and shared responsibility and sacrifice to some people have it and some people don't. And that equation is getting uglier in terms of income disparity, but now we're going to codify it into law. Unbelievable. I hope the Senate and I hope the administration understand that there's more at stake. There's more at stake in this budget than merely balancing the books.
Right.
There is a philosophy at stake.
Absolutely.
And there's a moral imperative.
Absolutely. And one of the, you know, and I have at times been a critic of this president, because I, at times I think he's not been strong enough. Because I believe the working class of this country, rightly or wrongly, looks to a politician, and if they see someone who is decisive and steadfast in their beliefs, they're going to support that person, whether they're right or wrong. And I was happy to see the president come out and draw a line in the sand. Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security.
It was excellent.
We're not going there.
And I'm glad he used Boehner's mistake on Meet the Press to say it's time that we opened up gas and oil subsidies as a revenue creator to deal with the deficit.
It was absolutely
smart, and it was a good thing. And, you know, part of the thing is that the president has to be our leader. He has to doesn't need to be ideologically connected with me or what the Progressive Caucus means, but to bring the values back to what Democrats are about and what the common folk want us to do. I think we intellectualize it to the point that people don't understand what we're saying. And I'm convinced, at least from the 2 weeks I've spent home, that the American people are really sick of taking the brunt of the economic crisis while some people have the privileged opportunity to enjoy it.
Yeah, well, they've gotten fat and happy off of it. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Raul Grijalva. He is a U.S. congressman from Arizona. You know, one of the things that I about the people's budget that I think is most important to me, you have put a Make It in America jobs program in here, and I think our trade deficit is the deficit that I would love people to actually focus on more than our budget deficits. Because I think with a trade deficit that's balanced, all of our other problems fall into line.
We looked at trade. We looked at the military. You know, two areas in which the budget has been criticized, and I have to be honest that we didn't do a deal with carbon tax and cap and trade, which is also a revenue generator.
Right.
And but those areas that you mentioned, trade, how that is laid out, and what that really means to the American people and what it means to manufacturing made in America and putting people to work is essential.
Well, I mean, jobs. I mean, every issue that you can rattle off, be it our deficit, our debts, our deficit with more jobs, we're paying more taxes, we're bringing that down. Immigration, there isn't an immigration problem because we got jobs. I mean, every issue, you can tick them off. With an economy moving forward, with people employed, we don't have these problems.
You know, and the people's budget has, and something that hasn't been talked about, we have a robust and huge immediate federal intervention public works jobs program, period.
Yep, because we've got a crumbling infrastructure. We've got bridges that are falling down.
And you know, the tolerance used to be 4% unemployment. My God, we're building a tolerance for 9%. And so we think that we got people working. I might be a simpleton on this. People are working. People are paying money. People are buying things. I think it starts to turn this economy around.
Let me ask you this, Congressman. You know, the Republicans are masters. I got to be honest. I give them more credit than I give Democrats in their simple-minded sloganeering and then their bumper sticker logic. I give them more credit because they're better at that. I do believe they have co-opted this whole budget process based on their message. And they got out early and they were able to hammer this spending thing. And the American people took it, you know, just like at my kitchen table. If I am not making enough money, got to cut off the cable TV. They've made it very simplistic. And what I've been trying to tell people is nothing is that simple. You look at what's going on down in the southern part of this country. There's a huge hurricane went through. A lot of money is going to be needed to spend. If we don't have the ability to borrow, if we don't have the ability to help those people, what's that say about us?
Well, it says we have no responsive government. And let me tell you now, we weren't cynical about it. But the Progressive Caucus understood that the spending message they had beat us to and cutting spending.
Okay.
So we incorporated in that. And so we said, yeah, we want to cut the deficit, no problem. But we picked, it's not if, it's how you do it. So our house are totally different from education, Medi-Cal, Social Security. And so I really think when the mainstream media didn't listen to our little budget, and the Democratic leadership in the House would not support our little budget, that they made a serious mistake because we didn't create a stark choice between the two. You know, because you can dance in the middle. Yeah. Until you have a stark choice, there is no point to compromise. So ours was, we're going to reduce the debt. We accept. We're going to cut spending. But we're going to cut it off oil. We're going to cut it off the corporations. We're going to cut it off the rich, and we're not going to cut it off Medicare. Then guess what? The American people like that idea.
Yes, I do. Very much so. And I hope you guys will take a stand on this. Last question I've got for you. You know, as we're moving forward in this discussion, how much traction do you think this is going to get, and what can I do to help?
Well, let me tell you. We didn't get a lot of support. You know, we weren't part of the privileged ones within our Democratic caucus to get the support of our caucus for our budget. Got 77 votes. People might make that a pittance, but it's not a pittance. It's 40% of our caucus. And what we believe now, as it begins to continue to pick up traction, and the people's budget becomes more realistic, more objective, and solving the problem kind of a budget, that we get to put pressure on the Senate, and we get to put pressure on the administration to hold the line on the vetoes that were promised.
Well, to me, it's a good budget. It has all the things that I want to see. It's got deficit reduction. It's got spending. I love the frame of deficit reduction by taking back those tax handouts that we gave away. And it talks about our trade deficit. That's important to me. Congressman, I appreciate your time.
And thank you. I appreciate it. I'm sorry it was late.
No worries. I appreciate your time, sir. Arizona Congressman Raul Grijalva. We're going to take a quick break. We are right back after this.
Listening to the Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Everybody ready? Let's do this!
We're here at Carter McRae Elementary School.
We teach exercise every day, and we love it.
Capital Blue Cross helps sponsor the program, so one of our medical directors, Rick Hammer, dropped by.
Capital Blue Cross is interested in supporting initiatives like this because we're trying to build healthy lifestyles, and the best place to start is with children.
It means a lot to teacher Dawn Evans.
Sometimes exercise is the one thing that a child does really successfully, and to start their day with success and with smiles, it impacts the rest of the day.
Keith Corrigan, who leads the exercises, agrees.
It's wonderful. I'm glad Capital Blue Cross did step in. It's good for the kids. It's good for the teachers. It's good for the school.
When you care more, you do more.
If it's the right thing to do, then we like to try to find a way to do it.
I can't hear you. Did you get a workout this morning?
Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
The Rick Smith Show. Where working people come to talk.
Yes, sold. Sold to the lowest bidder. Because that's what's going to happen, man. When we start selling off the commons, when we start selling off our state stores, the turnpikes and the parking garages, oh boy, all that low bid money we're going to get. Going to fill that portion of the budget really fast. Not so likely. But what we will do, is we will hand out more money to the big corporations. I mean, are you not outraged by the fact that we're giving billions of dollars to the oil industry? Are you not upset about this? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So, ExxonMobil came out with their profits report. $10.65 billion. Billion with a B. Almost $11 billion. $10.65 billion in the first quarter of this year, first 3 months. A 69% jump from last year. Now they're saying, well, you know, $4 a gallon kind of helped their profits. Do you think? So now here's my thought on this. They keep saying that, oh, the poor oil industry. They only make such a very small, tiny, minuscule amount of profit. Oh, it's so tiny. They had a 69% jump over last year. Now let me try and think this through a little bit. A 69% jump over last year. Did usage in the first 3 months of this year jump 69% from last year? No. What did change? Oh, yeah, the price that we're paying at the pump. Now, the price of a barrel went up as well, but they're not losing in this. And, you know, I would buy into this whole thing. Well, it's supply and demand. I would buy into the whole thing. Well, it's OPEC cutting, you know, cutting production. I would buy into that if I weren't seeing these record profits from these big oil companies. Sorry, I mean, if it's such a minuscule amount of profit, just a fraction of what each gallon, you know, just mere pennies of each gallon. That's all we get. A 69% jump, and we're still subsidizing them. That's my problem. We're handing them billions of dollars and basically saying, well, you know, thank you. Thank you, sir. May I have another? Now, what you're looking at in Russia, Russia's got some real problems. They have a true supply and demand problem. They've got shortages. They've got gas stations that you pull up to like we used to have in the 70s where you go, I'd like to have some gas. And the guy who owns the gas station says, yeah, me too. No gas. So what they're saying is no more exports. Starting in May, no more exporting of Russian gas. We're going to take care of ourselves first. Now, good for them. I encourage them to do that. And you know who I encourage to do kind of the same thing? Us. Don't you think it would be a good idea Don't you think it'd be a good idea if we began manufacturing things in this country again? Don't you think it'd be a good idea if all the natural gas that we're sucking out of the ground here in Pennsylvania stayed here in Pennsylvania and here in the United States instead of having congressmen like we have here in Pennsylvania going, gee, I'd like to sell this to China? Are we the brain dead ones in all of this? You know, we have the ability to become energy independent, yet we choose not to be. We choose not to be. I look at the race for Cumberland County Commissioner. There's one guy who's saying, you know, we need to think further ahead than our nose, which is why I like Mike Fedor. He's talking about we need public transportation. We need rail in this area soon. Not 5 years down the road, maybe 10. But we need to start looking down the road and saying, you know what? Gridlock is coming. How do we avoid it? How do we have some preventative maintenance? How do we start thinking beyond the tip of our nose? And you look at these budgets that these governors are putting out. Our guy here, Tom Corporate, $1 billion from education. $1 billion. Is that thinking beyond the tip of your nose? No. That's basically saying, future be damned. I wouldn't be surprised, gotta be honest. I wouldn't be surprised if Tom Corbett was one of those guys down on the street corner saying, you know what? May 21st is the end of the world. Don't worry about the 22nd. 21st is all over. Game over. Live, carpe diem. Live for today, man. Cause it's all over on the 21st. And then there was another group, love them. They were fighting with the other group saying, no, it's going to be next May. It's a year from now. But what we've got is we've got these governors, like our guy here, who's saying, you know what? I don't care about the future. I care about enriching right now, handing out that money to corporations, which is where a lot of this is going. So I look at what happened in Tucson, Arizona. There was a school board meeting. The Tucson School District was having a board meeting, and students came in with their signs. They came in with chains, and they chained themselves to all of the school board members' chairs before the school board sat down. So, and they chained all the chairs together. So they were all chained in place, chanting, education's under attack. What do we do? Here's a novel concept. Fight back. Maybe we could learn something from those 10 kids that sat down in those chairs and chained themselves to that chair. When you're under attack, like we are in this state, whether you're a worker or a student or a taxpayer or a person who wants to breathe clean air and drink clean water, when you're under attack, you fight back. That, my friends. Maybe we need to learn something from these kids. And what I'm saying, as we move down this budget process here in this state, we're going to need people to come to our Capitol. And I hope there are kids who chain themselves to the steps and chain themselves to the doors. And they bring their sleeping bags and their toothbrushes and they stay here until their future is secure. Because what do you do when you're under attack? You fight back. That's the message. Just like our budget in Washington. The fact of the matter is that the Republicans have co-opted the message. And they've got us all thinking single-mindedly. They've given us a villain, and we've all zeroed in on it. The mainstream corporate-controlled media has said, here it is, here's the red meat. Go, wolves, go to the red meat. Never mind everything that's on the sides. Go to the red meat. It's the spending. And it's on those people. On that foreign aid that we give virtually a pittance to. On those programs that feed women, infant, and children. Which we give a mere pittance to. But that's where the focus is. Instead of creating jobs and rebuilding our infrastructure. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Pennsylvania Democratic Party Chairman Jim Burns, back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better. USA. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. International Association of Firefighters President Harold Schaikberger says the union is turning off the spigot of millions of dollars to federal candidates and federal political parties because politicians aren't doing enough to stand up for labor in the face of intense attacks. Schaikberger says not only are extremist Republicans trying to destroy unions, but too few Democrats are standing up and fighting for firefighters and other workers.
It is now a coordinated and an organized effort by the far right to simply try to eliminate a significant portion of America's labor movement. Our congressional friends need to finally stand up and step out and be willing to fight back on our behalf with the same kind of commitment and focus and ferocity that the opposition, the enemy, has shown in their assault on America's workers and on our unions.
President Obama told Cleveland's WKYC-TV that he strongly opposes attacks on public workers in Ohio, Wisconsin, and elsewhere around the nation.
Let's make sure that we've got shared sacrifice. We make sure that the burden doesn't just fall on one set of folks. Let's certainly not blame public employees for a financial crisis that they had nothing to do with. And let's not use this as an excuse to erode their bargaining rights. Whether it's Wisconsin or what we're seeing in Ohio, I strongly disapprove.
Today, we remember the thousands of workers killed each day at work and the hundreds of millions hurt each year. Jesse Russell has more.
Today is Workers Memorial Day, an annual day set aside to remember workers who have been killed or disabled due to employment. This day of remembrance started in Canada in 1984, spread to the United States in 1989, and has since been embraced by countries around the globe. The International Labor Organization calls April 28th the World Day for Safety and Health at Work, and released the following statistics. Worldwide, 337 million people annually are victims of workplace accidents. 2.3 million die annually due to injuries or work-related illness. There are 6,300 workplace deaths daily. One of the leading causes of workplace fatalities are hazardous substances. Asbestos alone is attributed to the loss of 100,000 lives annually.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hard-working men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and by the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, Iron Ship Builders, Blacksmiths, Forgers, and Helpers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. I got to be honest, I'm still hung up on that Pittsburgh Tribune Review article last weekend proclaiming that the conservative wave missed Pennsylvania because our radical right-wing extremists are somehow less radical and more pragmatic. Yet we're still seeing the same attacks on workers' rights, the stupid privatization schemes, the scorched earth budget cuts of our children's future, not to mention the massive handouts to corporations who really are already not pulling their weight. And have I missed anything? I mean, have I missed anything in these last 100 days? So where's the moderation? And our governor has been there 101 days now. He's been very busy and extremely secretive. So much for transparency and accountability. I've got Jim Byrne on the line. He is chairman of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party, PADems.com. Also, we got a link at our site at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Jim's name. Take you right there. Jim, thanks for taking time for me.
Good evening. Thanks for having me on the show.
Have I missed anything? Did we miss this big wave, Jim? Should we be thankful for what the Trib said?
Well, again, the Trib insults the intelligence of its average reader. With respect to that article, they think that folks are going to read something like that in Western Pennsylvania or anywhere else for that matter and believe it. They're only fooling themselves, and they're really, in my opinion, just pandering to the ultra-conservative readership that comprises a majority of their demographic.
Yeah, well, here today in the Harrisburg paper, they said that, you know, Governor Tom Corbett's first 100 days were no honeymoon. And I'm going, really? I don't remember any real infighting. He's been pretty secretive. They've locked him away pretty much.
They have locked him away. But we have been sure to do everything we can as an organization those who disagree with his policies. The Democratic Party, we believe, have been very aggressive in shining as much light as we can under that rock to show people what's really going on. And then what we've seen are budgets that will increase tuition, which will raise property taxes. We've seen pandering the corporate donors, especially the Marcellus shale groups, which gave them $1 million, which are now in here not having to do any taxes or extraction fees. We've seen them put panels together of advisors to make policy, all of whom have special interests. We've seen him appoint to the Turnpike Commission the father of his campaign advisor. And now, to add insult to injury, after making draconian proposed cuts to education, he tells the campuses if they want to get some of that money back, let the big oil companies drill on campus. I thought it was a sick joke when I first heard that, but he was serious.
Yeah, and I've talked to a couple of people who saw that. That's a great idea. Put it right next to the dorms.
Let's put it next to the dorms. Anybody who thinks that is a solution is delusional, especially the governor. What he shows here, look, he was a prosecutor. Prosecutors are used to getting their way. They live in a world of absolutes, black or white. They don't live in a world of gray. They don't live in a world of leadership where people look for common ground. They come with their ideological base. They come with their beliefs. But they also know that you have to give and negotiate and bargain and come up with something that's in the best interest of everyone. Unfortunately, in the first 101 days, we've seen none of that from this gentleman.
But I gotta be honest with you. I look at this budget, and I say, you know, a lot of the things, this whole King thing that he's doing seems to be very short-sighted. Like he's one of these scorched-earth Republicans who don't think we're going to end up being around for another couple of months. Because by cheating the future of this country, by stealing $1 billion from K-12 education, by stealing 56% of the higher education budget, you're really dooming this state to almost a third-world status. So I don't know how that's going to do us any good in the long run.
You know, this time, this is the vicious cycle. Unfortunately, and I don't speak of all Republicans this way, but of this specific wing of the party, I have to. It's about power. It's not about government. It's about helping those who got you there and then getting out either through resignation or losing an election. This is what's happening right now, and then we buy into it. People are anxious right now. There's a crisis. And when they don't think that one party's moving in the right direction, they make radical changes. Unfortunately, we were on the receiving end of that in November. If there's any silver lining here, for your listeners, in Berks County, Reading, Pennsylvania, we just had a special election last month. Senator Opaque, a Democrat, in a district that was waning Democrat, it was waxing Republican, they were making gains. He passed away. We had a special election for a Democrat. Mr. Corbett, Lieutenant Governor Cawley, the Republican apparatus put $1 million into that race against our candidate. We won 58-42. So people are already getting buyer's remorse with this administration. I would suggest, sir, that by next year, if he doesn't change or doesn't move to the middle and work in a bipartisan fashion, Republican leaders in the Senate and in the House are going to run from him the way people ran from George Bush on the national level in 2006 and 2008.
Well, I'm sure hoping, because I think most of the people who voted in November, they heard, you know, budget cuts, and we're gonna cut the budget, we're gonna cut spending, we're gonna cut, and they didn't think it was gonna mean education. They didn't think on the national level it was going to mean Medicare. They didn't think it was going to mean things that affected them, personally.
It's the vicious, and again, back to that vicious cycle. When people hear cut, they think, great, less government, more money in my paycheck. I'm not gonna have to give so much to the state, to the Fed. This is great. I love you. I love what you're saying, Mr. Republican candidate. But the first cuts that are made are always the ones that are most important for what we need. Education, the future of Pennsylvania. And what we're seeing on this move by the governor is something I never thought I would see this soon out. Well, one, the 58-42 margin in Reading, didn't it? You know, that we thought we would win, hopefully, but my gosh, by that much,
yeah,
that's a positive sign for us. The other thing, very important, Republicans in the T are actually calling our office, expressing frustration The Penn State Agricultural Extension Program was cut. Educators go out into the T, the Republican stronghold, into the farmland, showing farmers how to stay up to date with tools, technology, training to be competitive with other agricultural states. That's gone. That's going to be gone. They don't know what they're going to do. They're reaching out to us.
Yeah, again,
I never thought I'd see that.
And again, you know, when I talked about November, everyone believes that there's an office in Harrisburg, with a gold plated door that says the Office of Waste, Fraud and Abuse, and there's a big pit in the middle of it that just burns our money. I think people think that there's this department there, and all we have to do is just close that department and everything will be fine. But as you pointed out, a very popular program in this area has been slashed, and people go, oh, wait a minute, that affects me. That's not what I wanted.
Exactly. Agriculture is our number one generator, economic engine in this state, and educational programs to help our number one economic engine be even more effective and competitive has been taken from the backbone of this commonwealth. And again, he doesn't seem to be showing the due diligence or the ability to think on several fronts, the ability to, if you're going to make cuts, do them in a way that everybody has to take a little bit of the pain. We all know that we have a problems here that need to be fixed. But to go after one specific group, especially our future, the way that he did, is just unconscionable. While at the same time, millions of dollars could be recognized through the Marcellus drilling issue.
Yep.
Giving those companies a free ride in this state because they gave, maybe not because, but when other states don't, when other states do charge these companies, it's unexcusable. Even the Republicans in the House and the Senate think there should be a tax or a drilling fee. He won't budge.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Here's the thing, Jim. We're already paying that tax. The tax is already in the price of the gas. The difference is the drillers are just now pocketing it, put it in their pocket. That's what bothers me. It's already in their business plan because in every other state in this country, they have an extraction tax. They've got a drilling tax. You suck a resource out from under our feet. We should be able to at least share in that wealth.
You know, they knew coming here that they would have to pay something. They came with their checkbooks. They walked away snickering. They are still snickering. The only state in the United States where they have this type of opportunity that they don't have to pay anything in that regard. It's mind-boggling.
It's absolutely mind-boggling. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Jim Byrne, chairman of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party, PADems.com. There's a link at our site at TheRickSmithShow.com. You know, Jim, you know, for me, before we start talking about any cuts, and I've been saying this ad nauseum for the last couple of months, I think we have a revenue problem. You pointed out the Marcellus Shale. I'm saying before we start talking about $1 billion being cut from K-12 education, close the Delaware loophole. Make these companies here pay profits that they make here. Do some of the other things, smokeless tobacco, cigars, before we start really stealing the future of our children. Maybe we should ask those to contribute a little bit more. And I would even give our governor a pass on that bizarre, stupid pledge he took. If he would, we'll call it a contribution instead of a tax if we have to.
Sure. I mean, anybody that makes a pledge like that, they're only going to get into trouble. Either they're being disingenuous when they say it, or they really mean it, and that's just through inexperience and not realizing the vast nature of the office for which they're seeking. He could make a position shift that would be welcome, or he could do what you suggested. There are other ways to find revenue sources. It takes a little elbow grease. It takes a little creative thinking, none of which we have seen. It's just my way or no way prosecutorial type of an approach is not going to work. And we're starting to see some pushback even from Republican leadership at this point, and we're only on the 101st day.
Yep. It's scary stuff. And what bothers me is, I think the public is being lulled to sleep. You look at it and I go, and I think that piece of the Trib Review is important to recognize where they say, you know, that all that craziness in Wisconsin and Ohio and up in Maine and New Hampshire, all that craziness, that just passed us by because we've got moderate, pragmatic Republicans.
It's almost like when Egypt was in its uprising, the government channels were playing, soap operas and peaceful music. Let's whistle past the graveyard, or let's keep everybody's eyes off what's really going on. it almost becomes a propaganda piece versus some type of objective journalism.
Yeah, bread and circus, or as I always say, American Idol and Cheetos.
Well put.
Because, you know, at the end of all of this, I don't see the kind of mobilization. We spent a week in Wisconsin during the height of the uprising there. I don't see that kind of mass mobilization happening here, and I'm hoping as this budget process happens, we see some of that. So I guess my last question I've got for you, what are you guys planning on doing at the Pennsylvania Democratic Party to get your folks out into the streets? Because I think this has to be fought in the street. This isn't a phone call thing. This is going to the Capitol. This is staying if you have to. But it's getting in the streets.
Well put. I've been very fortunate to be a chairman now for 11 months. I'll be a chairman 1 year in June. When we hit the ground last June, the R's were already at the three-quarter turn. In the last year, what we've done is we've raised the money. We have built a staff with the Pennsylvania Democratic Party, the likes of which it has never seen. We have four directors. We have additional staff working with them. We have research. We have communications. We have voter outreach. We have messaging. We're working right now on a 67-county strategy for the commissioner races, the mayor's races, getting from the ground up, building this party. We are working with our brothers and sisters in the labor movement. I was in Pittsburgh today at one of the memorial services. Very powerful. Our messages are very identical. We represent working-class Americans and Pennsylvanians who are under attack by this administration. We have a very talented staff. We're continuing to build this party. We're going to get the message out to the street, out to the voters, out to the Pennsylvanians on both parties who are affected by a governor who has lost touch with their most basic needs.
Keep up the great work. I've been paying attention. I hope you'll come back. We'd love to have you.
I would be honored to come on your show anytime.
All right, Jim. Thank you so much. Jim Byrne. Chairman of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party, PADems.com. Of course, we've got a link at our site at TheRickSmithShow.com. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
PSECU, we know those holiday bills can really pile up and hit you with double-digit interest rates or fees that start to snowball. Next thing you know, you're buried in a mountain of debt. Dig out by using our 3.9 annual percentage rate Visa balance transfer. Good through December 31st, 2012. That's a really big deal. And you heard that right. Our really big deal, 3.9% APR, is good through December 31st, 2012. And we don't charge you a balance transfer fee. So if you used any other credit card to pay for your holiday purchases, move those high interest rate balances to your PSECU Visa. The sooner you get in on this really big deal, the more you'll save. Financing Life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pscc.com/life to get in on our really big deal Visa balance transfer. Don't wait. Start saving.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the site at thericksmithshow.com. Today, of course, back in 1970 was the signing of the creation of the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Also, Workers' Memorial Day. A couple of reasons that maybe I think. There was a coal mine collapse in Eccles, West Virginia. Killed 181 miners back in 1914 on this day. Also in West Virginia, a place called Benwood, in 1924, 119 miners died on this day. So, you know, when we think back, you go, you know, the Massey explosion, 29 people died, and it's a horrible tragedy. But just going back to on this date, over 300 people died. We have made some progress, but there's more to be done. Also today, back in 1993, was the first Take Our Daughters to Work Day, promoted by the Miss Foundation to boost self-esteem of girls, so that they can go see what their parents do for a living. And now, you know, the women are they're outnumbering the men in the workforce and with college educations and with advanced degrees. It's no longer a man's world. Today, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette has reported that two workers who were hurt at a drilling site are now suing the company. I got to be honest, I don't know that they're going to be able to do that with the workers' comp laws unless they were independent contractors of some sort. But this is a question that we'll have for our friend Irwin Aronson when he comes back next week. These two guys were working on one of the oil rigs, and they got there was a little explosion, I guess, and they got burnt up. So some serious injuries that happened. Volatile vapors came up, ignited in the well flowback, and caught them on fire. They're suing. Here's the thing, and this is what gets me. This is very dangerous work. And what's happened is we've simplified it to the point where, it's just going to bring all these jobs, and it's going to be real neat and clean and tidy. We hear the commercials on the radio all the time. Well, Range Resources came in, and you know they painted my fence before they left, and they planted trees, and all this, they made it look better than it was before. So they're already doing a really good job of messaging. I mean, we're hearing all this noise out there about how wonderful they are. All this noise from the radical wing of the Republican Party as well. The guy who heads up the Tinky Tank over here, the Commonwealth Foundation. I heard him say today, the environmental left wants something they didn't earn. They want it for free from good corporate citizens like the drillers. Here's the thing. We've lost this fight. We've lost the frame right from the start. They've already taken the gas as their own. It's our gas, folks. Let me remind you of that. That's why they call this a Commonwealth. It's all of ours. It's the Commonwealth's gas. What happened here is you and I, we the people, we got screwed in these lease agreements. Right from the start, because you had these people who they were just handing them out. Oh, yeah, go out there and drill. Yeah, go. We're gonna sell them off. We can make a couple of pennies. Well, these guys are going out there making millions. And I love hearing from the radical right how it's going to benefit Pennsylvania. I heard our Tinky Tank guy a number of times go, oh, it's going to benefit Pennsylvania. All this gas is going to stay in Pennsylvania, but you got Republicans who are saying we should be selling it to the Chinese. We should be selling it to the international market because there's profit to be made. And we should do it without taxing it because, you know, those environmentally left people, those hippie liberals, they want something they didn't earn. Hold on. It's our gas. It's the people's gas. It's under our feet. It's our state. Sorry. When someone comes in from out of state and drills our gas, we should get a portion of it. I'm not saying all of it. A portion of it. To fix the roads, to fix the bridges, to create an education system to surround that. And, oh, I don't know, maybe to make sure that the air we breathe, clean, the water we drink, clean, and that if it's possible, and I don't even know that it's possible to do this in an environmentally sound way. I don't. What I do know is we need to have some regulation. We need to have some oversight because it's going to happen. I'm of the mindset this is going to happen regardless of what we do. It's already, you know, the horse has already left the barn. You're not sticking the genie back in the bottle. Ain't happening. So we've got to get in front of this and somehow make sure that, oh, I don't know, like the picture I saw in Bradford County where the well is like 50 feet from the people's backyard. There's a family that lives there. What happens when that thing explodes like it did on these two guys who are suing this company? What happens when that explodes? What happens to those children who are playing in the backyard on their swing set? And what we've got is we've got a governor who's saying, you know what we should do? I've cut 56% of the higher education budget. Yes, I have, because I am king and I can do that. So what I suggest is those of you, those six of the 14 state campuses that are on the that are located on the Marcellus Shale Formation, just drill on your campus. You know, put it right there in the middle of the football field when you're not using it. Just start pumping it right out of the ground. In fact, maybe you could make a memorial out of it, or make it, you know, make a swing set out of it. You know, you use it as a decoration piece. You know, some of that art people like. Modern well, if you will. And generate some revenue that way. There's a good idea. You know, put it right next to the dorms. Or next to the, you know, the cafeteria. Give the food a little flavor. Because I remember, I got to be honest, when I remember my first stint in college, food wasn't all that great on campus. But you look at the fact right now, we've got 2,000 wells that have been drilled in the last 2 years. 2,000. They're talking about 200,000 within the next 5 years. 200,000 wells across the formation. How are you going to control that if you're not in front of the game? And I hear people say all the time, well, you know, we need the jobs. We do need the jobs. But you can't drink your job. Water is one of those things, folks. One of those things that you cannot live without. Air is the other thing you can't live without. Now, the environmentalists who say, well, you know, there's this frog or there's this salamander or there's this something way up in the middle of the woods that's going to be disturbed. And the right wing is going to go, so what? What do I care about a frog or a salamander? I need profit. It's a losing argument. Where the argument is, look, you breathe air. You need water. We should have a say how this state looks in 20 years. Do we want to go back to the coal years? Do we want to look like West Virginia, who really coal has got them by the short hairs? So as we move down this whole path, don't always believe what they're telling. Don't always buy into the nice soft commercial. Well, you know, they're my drilling company, because they made my land better than it was before. Really? How's your water? I wish I could find someone who lives up in that area where the Bradford spill was. Thousands of gallons of this toxic fluid, which, you know, the guy at the Tinky Tank said was just water and sand and some household chemicals. That's all it is. It's water and sand with some household chemicals in it. It's nothing. I wish someone would send me a jug of their water so I could put it on my desk and look at it. Because these accidents are going to happen no matter what we do. It's a matter of getting in front of it, and it's a matter of making sure that they're infrequent. And it doesn't take 20 hours to find out that something happened. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to talk with University of Pittsburgh professor Conrad Daniel Voles. He's assistant professor, director of the Center for Healthy Environments and Communities, also the director of the Environmental Health Risk Assessment Certificate Program. We're right back after this.
Lord have mercy on the working man.
and an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
A recent email to me pretty well sums up the big budget hullabaloo being pushed by Tea Party Republicans. As the writer put it, remember when teachers, public employees, Planned Parenthood, NPR, and PBS crashed the stock market, wiped out half of our 401ks, took trillions in bailout money, spilled oil in the Gulf of Mexico, gave themselves billions in bonuses, and paid no taxes? Then he added, yeah, me neither. Yet, it's teachers, the middle class, the poor, the elderly, the environment, and the idea of public service that GOP Congress critters and governors want to punish for the destructive deeds of Wall Street banksters and corporate elites. For example, the GOP's widely ballyhooed budget plan doesn't just end Medicare as we know it, it ends it, period. Instead of extending this efficient and effective health care program, they would toss the elderly under the bus of insurance profiteers. Goodbye and good luck. How's this for bitter irony? Last year, Tea Party Republicans got elected to Congress by falsely claiming that Obama's universal health care program would require, quote, massive Medicare cuts. And now, those same Tea Partiers are not merely voting to cut Medicare, they're killing it. They're also trying to gut Medicaid, taking three-quarters of $1 trillion out of this essential health care program for poor families. Would this savings help reduce the deficit, as they claim? No, it would merely be redistributed to the super-rich in the form of $1 trillion in new tax giveaways. This is Jim Hightower saying the GOP budget plan shows who they are and whom they serve. As one observer says, it's a measure of just how far off the deep end Republicans have gone. That's former President Ronald Reagan's budget director speaking. And we all remember what a lefty Reagan was.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.com.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Our quote of the day comes from Exxon's vice president for public and government affairs. You know, the company that the first 3 months of this year made $10.65 billion in profits. He said political overreaction to a small number of isolated environmental issues could jeopardize this emerging industry and the benefits it provides. Of course, he's talking about drilling for natural gas. And, you know, this small, very small number of incidents, small things. I love how they minimize. I got to be honest, I don't know that I want my well water contaminated. I don't know that I want my faucet to catch on fire. But, you know, of course, that was all made up. At least that's what I heard today on the radio going home. But to get the straight numbers, to get the straight facts, I've asked Daniel Voles. He's a professor at the University of Pittsburgh. He's an assistant professor, director of the Center for Healthy Environments and Communities. Professor, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you.
You know,
I'm glad to be there.
I appreciate it. I look at this minimization. They try and minimize everything. Oh, just a few isolated incidents. You know, like that 20-hour spill that happened up north there last week. Just a few isolated incidents.
Well, that's what we have been hearing now for about 4.5 years. Is a litany of essentially minimizing what's been going on, when if you look at what has been going on, we have had essentially a gas rush here in Pennsylvania, particularly in the Northeast, but also in the Southwest area of the state. We've analyzed the numbers and found that there's about a 5 in 1,000 chance of an immediately dangerous to life and health situation coming about from these Marcellus shale wells. That includes these catastrophic blowouts, fires, and explosions. And if you apply that to the 20,000 or so wells that they want to drill over the next 10 years, you're talking about 100 such incidents that, you know, these are serious incidents. And this is a largely unregulated industry. And we, with 100 incidents, we're able, these things are being cited in people's backyards, next to schools, next to critical infrastructure, even next to factories. And this is wrong, and the wrong kind of public health policy that we need at this time.
Yeah, I mean, one of the pictures I saw of the blowout, and I think it was in Bradford County, the well was like 50 feet away from this family's backyard. I mean, it's right in the neighborhood.
You know, we've been very lucky over the past few years. In the two well blowout incidents, they've occurred, luckily, again, in two pretty less populated areas. If they we analyzed this, and if they would have occurred in Peters Township in Washington County, Pennsylvania, where we start to get more of a suburban population, we would have had to evacuate over 1,900 people within a mile radius of these. That would include also five schools. And this just doesn't make sense in an era when, as a country, we're spending tens of billions of dollars every year to make our infrastructure not hard targets for terrorism.
Yeah. You know, what do you think of the governor saying today that he thinks, you know, the six universities, the six state-owned universities that are in the Marcellus Shale formation, that they should just start drilling on their campus?
I think that's outrageous. The issue, you know, this is not your grandmother and grandfather's natural gas. We, in particularly in the Northeast and through the Marcellus area down through the Southwest, are very familiar with conventional oil and gas drilling that we've seen for the last 100 years. And it's well known that you drill, you know, not very far down, you puncture an oil layer or a gas layer, it flows out in a gusher. It's very low energy to get this gas out. This is a highly industrialized operation.
Right.
And to have these near campuses, near schools is really the height of folly.
Yesterday you were here in Harrisburg at a rally in front of the advisory board meeting, and you said something that really caught my attention. You said, and I think properly, you said that what we're talking about as wastewater, as, you know, as brine water, is not really there's nothing water. It's a toxic fluid. So my question I have for you is, you know, I heard the local Tinky Tank guy here in Harrisburg say, well, you know, that toxic water that you're calling it is just it's just water and sand with some household chemicals in it.
Well, first of all, they're literally adding thousands and thousands of tons of chemical additives to fresh water or recycled water before they frack. And these, some of the compounds are things like 2-butoxyethanol, the major component of Windex. And Windex, by the way, is a very toxic compound. We know most of the health effects from 2-butoxyethanol from people who actually have drank Windex trying to kill themselves, and it's quite toxic. But the thing to remember here is the greatest mass of chemicals that are contaminants in this blowback fluid are not coming from what is added by the companies when they do this slick water fracturing. The greatest mass of chemicals is coming from the shale layer itself. When you put this slick water solution in at high pressures, you're solubilizing many metals, things like barium and strontium. This layer is highly enriched in radium and thorium radionuclides. It has uranium in it, and it also has scores of different toxic petroleum hydrocarbons. I mean, it's full of them. That's why we're trying to get the gas out. And some of the things in it are like benzene and toluene and xylene, things that we know from, and things that we know that, that from occupational health exposures of workers are very serious indeed.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Conrad Daniel Vols. He's an assistant professor at University of Pittsburgh, director of the Center for Healthy Environments and Communities. Well, let me ask you this. Are you against drilling in theory practice? Are you against the whole the movement? Because there are some folks who think we should not be drilling anything at all. It should just completely stop. I don't think that's feasible, but I'm curious your position.
My position is that essentially we should stop this expedited production that we're in. This is an experiment that's being done on the people of Pennsylvania and, frankly, many other states right now. And the company is learning how to do this, doing well by well by well. But, you know, in Maryland, they're doing this a much different way. They have a what I think is a very sane state policy where they've only put out permits for about six wells, and they're going to study this in their own state to try to understand where the problems are in their legal structure, in their environmental regulations, as well as where the toxic problems are. And then they're going to adjust their state policy to what they find before they go into any production mode. So my position is this. I still believe very firmly that we need to stop the production mode here in Pennsylvania. We need to slow this down. Right. We need to catch up with our regulations, and then we can see where we can proceed. In effect, I'm not saying not now, not ever. I am saying very clearly, not now. Let's do research and science on this. Let's determine how to do this the right way without experimenting with this in people's backyards. And then let's proceed when we know more, and we can plan this out better.
You know, but here's the argument against that. If we do that, if we do what Maryland's doing and we do, you know, what New York's doing, then the drillers just won't come and we'll lose. We'll lose out on this big boom because somehow magically all that gas, like, maybe it'll just go away.
It will not go away. That's just it. The drillers are going nowhere. We are over the Saudi Arabia of the Marcellus. The drillers will come back anytime we want them to come back.
And under any condition that we want them to come back on.
That's exactly right. This gas has been down there. Remember, this isn't a flowing gas. This is locked in a rock. It is going nowhere. It's been there for 300 million years, and it's going to be there for a couple hundred million more years. There's no rush.
I'm right there with you. You know, my other question is, can we do this safely? Because I got to be honest, I've kind of become accustomed to breathing air and drinking water, and I'd prefer them to be semi-healthy. You know, because I need them to live. Can it be done safely that it's not going to pollute our waterways and not pollute our air and not destroy this state? Because I don't think most people realize that this could be a major transformation of this state to where we're going to end up like West Virginia with the coal industry, basically beholden to one industry.
Oh, well, anyone who wants to see the future of Pennsylvania here need only look at what the development has occurred in Washington, in Pennsylvania. I have pictures, essentially, of Google Earth pictures that show a few wells in 2005. And then in 2010, when Google redid their map structure, we show hundreds and hundreds of wells in one area. It's a tremendous land disruption, and you know, if we go ahead in an unfettered way across the state of Pennsylvania, there could be hundreds of thousands of wells over the next 10 to 15 to 20 years, maybe even more. And it is quite possible. And I'm not, you know, I'm not an alarmist about this. This is, look at what's happened in Houston. Look at what's happened in areas of Wyoming. You could let the window anywhere over the Marcellus Greenway, and you will not have a scene. You will not have a sight line without seeing some artifact of the oil and gas industry, either a well site, a condenser station, a gathering line, a pipeline, a cryogenic plant, etc. So on to your question of whether this can be done safely or not, I don't know. I don't know.
It's an honest answer.
And I don't think that anyone can say this with quite clearly. You know, the EPA is doing a study right now, and it's really a whole set of studies and getting information from all kinds of sources where this has been done for even longer than it has been done in Pennsylvania. The closer we look, the more we know about the problems associated with this process. There are air pollution problems as well as water pollution problems. So I'm not sure we have the information yet in order to drive state and federal environmental policy in the right direction.
But our government here, we seem to be going, go ahead, go do what you need to do, and we're not going to bother interfering or don't worry about it. We're not going to regulate you.
Well, I understand. And, I have to say at this point that I see very little difference between the current Republican administration in Harrisburg and the Democratic administration that preceded it. They welcomed this with open arms.
Yep.
And the only difference really is a difference over whether they want a severance tax or not. But the environmental policies are really no different.
Yeah, good point. It's all about being business friendly, and business friendly not good for people who breathe air or drink water. Professor, I appreciate your time. Great information. I'd love to have you back again sometime soon to talk about this again.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Professor. Professor Vols, Director of the Center for Healthy Environments and Communities, University of Pittsburgh. We're going to take a quick break. Back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Can this be done safely? Should we continue the hands-off approach? We're back after this.
Defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
PSECU, we know those holiday bills can really pile up and hit you with double-digit interest rates or fees that start to snowball. Next thing you know, you're buried in a mountain of debt. Dig out by using our 3.9 annual percentage rate Visa balance transfer. Good through December 31st, 2012. That's a really big deal. And you heard that right. Our really big deal 3.9% APR is good through December 31st, 2012. And we don't charge you a balance transfer fee. So if you used any other credit card to pay for your holiday purchases, move those high-interest rate balances to your PSECU Visa. The sooner you get in on this really big deal, the more you'll save. Financing Life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to PSECU.com/life to get in on our really big deal Visa balance transfer. Don't wait. Start saving.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. I was on my way home. My son's playing T-ball, so I rushed home to coach the team. And as I was going back to my house, I turned on one of the local talk shows and heard this guy, this Durgan guy, going on about the whole Marcellus Shale thing. And I mean, he seems to me to be kind of an old, angry curmudgeon type. But here he was, just blathering on about how we should be drilling on these college campuses. Like somehow this is a really safe thing to be doing. And, never mind that we're cutting half of the higher education budget. So we're taking their future education away. Let's put this that we don't know much about right in the center of their living experience. And maybe, we'll shorten that life so they won't have to be miserable as long by not having an education. I mean, that seems to be the rationale. Just kind of weird. And, he brought the Tinky Tank guy on, which just got me kind of flipped. That the toxic substance that's coming out of these wells, and of course, evidently not being, treated in the treatment plants that they were going to be, now they don't know, I don't know what they're doing with it now, but according to my Tinky Tank guy, it's just water and sand with some household chemicals. Like, you can almost drink it. It's just some household chemicals. It won't kill you. It's good for you. I mean, I'm waiting for that to happen. When that stuff comes out of the ground, it's actually good for the environment. Makes the plants grow bigger. I'm waiting for that. Just nuts. Our quote of the week comes from Julian Zillinger, Princeton historian. Ultimately, he says, we need to make sure we don't allow economic inequality as opposed to our democratic institutions to define our nation. If we do, he says, we will be watching royal weddings right here in our own backyard. And you look at that wedding over there, and it kind of makes you go, really? Sorry, I must be missing something. I don't know. It seems like an awful lot of money, an awful lot to do, but to look at that, the royal family, if you want. And I guess as an American, I just don't get that. I didn't care when the Bush twin got married, and I didn't care when we had, the celebrity weddings, I guess some people do. But to spend $68 million at a time when you're talking about slashing social programs that help those folks seems kind of dumb to me. Seems kind of dumb. Our stat of the day comes from the folks over at the Too Much Online blog. They write, over half the income that goes to America's most affluent 1%, according to Daniel K. Johnston, the Pulitzer Prize-winning tax analyst, goes to the top 10th of 1%, the richest one out of every 1,000 families. For every taxpayer dollar that goes to this top 10th of 1%, back in 1980, $4 now go to the top 1/10. Of 1%. So we've got all this wealth going to the folks at the very top while we're still talking about cutting social programs, cutting education, cutting Medicare, destroying the care. And the Republicans, they ran on this idea that they were going to undo the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. I look at this Republican from Tennessee, Scott Deslaharius. He campaigned last year on the pledge, we're going to repeal the dreaded Obamacare. In fact, he accused his incumbent opponent of trying to use smoke and mirrors to implement socialized medicine. So, like a good soldier, when he got elected, he went and he voted for the repeal of health care. Now you fast forward a couple of months, and it appears that our Republican friend, his office, is touting the success of one of the Obamacare programs. According to the Crossville Chronicle, A representative from Deslaharius's district office was on hand last week for a groundbreaking ceremony to hand over nearly $4.5 million in grant money, entirely funded by the Affordable Care Act, for the construction of a community health clinic in Cumberland County, Tennessee. Greg Ridley, a staffer for this guy, is posed in a photo op with the big giant ceremonial check with a big grin, basically taking credit for making the grant possible. Now, understand, this $4.5 million grant had nothing to do with this guy. In fact, this guy would have voted against it. It would have never come to the district, but there he is, like a good politician, sending a representative to put a big smile on, big check, so that the simple-minded go, well, look what he brought back to our district. He wouldn't have brought that back. There would be no community health center there. There would be pay or die. That's what our T-Twizzlers want. And I wonder if the people of Tennessee buy it. I wonder if the people in that area buy it. Although, I got to be honest, I saw a story today out of Knoxville News there in Tennessee that evidently they're lifting the limit on corporate campaign donations. You know, corporations can now spend on candidates as where they were forbidden to in the past. You know, are we going to the point where our corporate masters are going to be able to spend unlimited sums of money to get more of their people there so that we see situations like this where the guy who clearly is against what's going on is taking credit for what's going on even though he was against it? And there are people who will look at this and go, oh, he's a good guy. Look what he did. I agree with community health centers, and he brought it to us. Oh, thank you. And they'll go vote for him based on the fact that that community health center was there, even though he was against it from the very beginning. How screwed up are we? Oh, by the way, we're screwed up that way because the media keeps pumping it out. Because the big folks at Comcast, who control a big portion of the media, are taking those dollars from corporate America to keep pumping out the message. The Tennessee House Democratic Caucus Chairman, Mike Turner, he noted that foreign-based corporations also would be allowed to contribute under the bill. Oh, boy. Here's the part I love. Republican House Representative and sponsor of this bill, Glenn Quesada, he had the money shot. He had the money shot. More money is more free speech. There's the money shot. The more dollars, the more votes. It has nothing to do about people. It's about money. And that's all it's about. In fact, the new bill goes beyond that to authorize corporations to give money directly to candidates, to give money directly to political parties for the first time in the history of Tennessee. So, again, as we're talking about corporations being people, this is what you get. Is this right? Are we moving towards this here in Pennsylvania? Oh, by the way, we don't get to know who it is. We don't know who gets to spend the money because it's all done in secret. What happened to transparency? What happened to accountability? What happened to sunshine? Didn't they run on that? That they were going to make government more accountable, more accountable to the people, more open, more transparent. We're going to put everything on the internet. We're going to do all these things. I mean, politicians on both sides. And like the professor said, the last administration wasn't much better on this Marcellus Shale thing. That's why it's going to take, like happened yesterday, or 100 people showed up and basically shut down that meeting. It's going to take civil disobedience. It's going to take people in the streets. And that's what I advocate for. It's going to take people standing up for their rights, just like on the job. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with David Briggs. He's an organizer for the United Mine Workers of America. We're right back after this. We'll be right back.
the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. International Association of Firefighters President Harold Schaikberger says the union is turning off the spigot of millions of dollars to federal candidates and federal political parties because politicians aren't doing enough to stand up for labor in the face of intense attacks. Schaikberger says not only are extremist Republicans trying to destroy unions, but too few Democrats are standing up and fighting for firefighters and other workers.
It is now a coordinated and an organized effort by the far right to simply try to eliminate a significant portion of America's labor movement. Our congressional friends need to finally stand up and step out and be willing to fight back on our behalf with the same kind of commitment and focus and ferocity that the opposition, the enemy, has shown in their assault on America's workers and on our unions.
President Obama told Cleveland's WKYC-TV that he strongly opposes attacks on public workers in Ohio, Wisconsin, and elsewhere around the nation.
Let's make sure that we've got shared sacrifice. We make sure that the burden doesn't just fall on one set of folks. Let's certainly not blame public employees for a financial crisis that they had nothing to do with. And let's not use this as an excuse to erode their bargaining rights. Whether it's Wisconsin or what we're seeing in Ohio, I strongly disapprove.
Today we remember the thousands of workers killed each day at work and the hundreds of millions hurt each year. Jesse Russell has more.
Today is Workers' Memorial Day, an annual day set aside to remember workers who have been killed or disabled due to employment. This day of remembrance started in Canada in 1984, spread to the United States in 1989, and has since been embraced by countries around the globe. The International Labor Organization calls April 28th the World Day for Safety and Health at Work, and released the following statistics. Worldwide, 337 million people annually are victims of workplace accidents. 2.3 million die annually due to injuries or work-related illness. There are 6,300 workplace deaths daily. One of the leading causes of workplace fatalities are hazardous substances. Asbestos alone is attributed to the loss of 100,000 lives annually.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and by the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, Iron Ship Builders, Blacksmiths, Forgers, and Helpers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Official supporter of Palin Santorum 2012, The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Today is Workers' Memorial Day, the day that you remember the people who lost their lives on the job, who were injured on the job. People like Larry Merrick, a 53-year-old man who on April 15th was in a mine that collapsed in Salmon, Idaho. He died in the Lucky Friday mine there. It's people like that that we remember, because on Sunday they recovered his body a mile underground. And, you know, a lot of these mining accidents happened in the past, and we've had some recently. You know, go back, like I said earlier, back in 1914, 181 workers killed in West Virginia. Back in 1924, another 119 workers killed in another mine disaster. While back then it was commonplace, today, fortunately, not so much, but it still happens, and it still can be prevented. There's a lot we should be doing and a lot we should be fighting for. That's why I've asked Dave Briggs. He's Regional 1 organizer for the United Mine Workers of America. Dave, thanks for taking time for me.
No problem, Rick.
Today, like I said, marked Workers' Memorial Day. We'll remember folks like Larry Merrick and all of the miners and all of the people who have lost their lives on the job. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, some of the things that you've seen, some of the things that have gone on in mines the past several years, especially the Massey mine, the Upper Big Branch mine there, were killed 29 within the last couple of years, and yet our CEO is still walking around. It, to me, just seems criminal.
Yeah, the CEO is Don Blankenship, and the United Mine Workers, the union that I represent, is not afraid to state this, that Don Blankenship is a criminal for what he has done, especially at the Upper Big Branch mine. Not only, a little over a year ago, did 29 coal miners die, but he also, over the 10 years prior, has killed a total of 52 coal miners and has gotten away with it.
Let me ask you this, Dave, as an organizer with the UMWA, you know, how many of these miners who have died on the job in recent times have been members of the UMWA? And is there a correlation between having that voice on the job of going into the mine and saying, hey, something's not right, I'm turning around, and not having a voice? Do you see some correlation between that?
Yes, I do. As an organizer, I was a coal miner for 10 years prior to becoming involved in the organizing department of the United Mine Workers. And from 2006 on, I actually have a few statistics here, some numbers I could give you if it's all right.
Please.
Okay. From 2006 to 2010, one big figure that we have is there's been 125 minor accidents that have killed miners. 120 are non-union coal mines. 4 are union. I'll break it down for you. In 2006, and this is a strong talking point for me, when I go to a non-union coal miner's house, in 2006, there's 28 mining accidents. 27 were non-union, 1 was union. 2007 and 2008, I have a combined figure of 30 miners' deaths. 29 were non-union, 1 was union. In 2009, there were 18 miners' deaths. 17 were non-union, 1 was union, and in 2010, which would include the Upper Big Branch, 48 coal miners died, 47 were non-union, and 1 was union. And my talking point, when I go to a non-union coal miner's house, I cannot stress this enough, that a union mine is a safer mine. In a union mine, the workers have the right to speak up and say that it's an unsafe condition, and then it's taken care of properly. In a non-union mine, what I'm hearing from the non-union coal miners is they're afraid to open their mouth with the fear of losing their job.
The reality is in most states in this country, if you don't have a union contract, if you don't have something backing you up, a contract that every CEO in this country has, if you don't have that written document that gives you the power to do that, you're at will. You're out the door. You do what you're told, or you are discarded like trash.
Yes.
I guess my question is, and when I look at this scenario, why aren't all the miners, given the numbers that you've given, which are I didn't think it was that stark of a difference. Why aren't all the miners union miners?
Because, well, what you have is a younger generation of a coal miner, and you know, you go out to these houses and they're not educated about union because our schools have failed to teach our children about unions and the way they work. So when a younger coal miner goes to work and he's making, for the first time, he's making $25, $30 an hour as a coal miner, that's great. And the company, they have all day long to feed them all kinds of lies, telling them how good of a job they're doing, which they probably are. And also, they can also tell them when there's a union knocking on the door, they make us out to look like bad people. Now, these statistics I said, 124 coal mining accidents and only 4 were union workers, you know, accidents do happen.
Right.
That is going to happen. You know, a fireman gets killed on the job, a policeman gets killed in the line of duty. Those are things that are going to happen. But these guys, these younger miners, they're just brainwashed by the bosses and the CEOs like Don Blankenship, or they're even intimidated by these guys also.
You know, I gotta be honest. I look at someone like Blankenship, and I question why he's not in prison. And I point to this 2005 memo where he wrote, "If any of you talking to the coal miners, if any of you have been asked by your group presidents, your supervisors, engineers, or anyone else to do anything other than run coal, i.e., build overcasts, do construction jobs, or whatever, you need to ignore them and run coal." Explain to me what an overcast is.
Okay, the overcast is when they're underground mining. Your overcast is, how could I say, when you're underground mining, they need to take, you know, mostly the coal out of there.
Right.
And the overcast is that's a term they use that they don't want to have any downtime. Okay. So let me say this to you. Going back to Don Blankenship and this particular mine, we tried to organize this mine three times, this Upper Big Branch mine. The first time it came out as a tie, okay? And not to get away from the question there, but the first time it was a tie, and when it's a tie, the union loses.
Right.
That's an unfair, but that's the way it is. Then the second time that the union, the United Mine Workers, went in there, they lost due to retribution of the union supporters of the previous election. They made examples out of the guys, and they fired them or they gave them a lousy job,
right,
so to speak. The third time, over 70% of the workers in that mine have signed cards, which is almost a sure win. And 2 days prior, Don Blankenship went around and he threatened loss of job if the union was voted in. Now that's an unfair labor practice, and it went through the National Labor Relations Board, but that's a whole different subject to get into.
Yeah, that was a Bush board. But, you know, I look at this quote, and the reason I bring it up, because to me, this seems like decided negligence, this willful negligence, because as I was understanding it, you know, these overcasts or construction jobs, you know, to basically hold up the roof or to make sure that things are being ventilated properly, if anybody asks you to do any of that stuff, you ignore them and you just keep running coal, because the rest of the quote is because coal pays the bills. And to me, that kind of willful disregard for human safety, I think, should be punished.
Yeah. And two of the big factors in this particular mine that Don Blankenship has yet to confess up to was the methane levels were outrageous in this mine. All he had to do was put up a few walls, put up a little bit of construction, maybe put a new, if he had to drill a new air shaft in for proper ventilation, right? Wouldn't have taken all that much money. And the other problem that they had was also the rock dust. Methane or rock dust, either one is a very combustible mixture.
Right.
All they had to do was a little bit of what they call rock dusting. It's like a white pasty substance that they spray on the ceiling and the walls going into the mine, keep the dust under control. Methane levels, proper ventilation, take that right out of there while they're working. MSHA did not pick up on this stuff. I understand that their machines for detecting the methane levels were broken. I did work with MSHA for a short period, a little over a year. And, you know, they're a good agency, and they're definitely good to have in a non-union mine, but the miners are only safe while the MSHA officials are on the property.
Right. Here's my problem with that. Because I do believe, as a working class in this country, Dave, that we have been too dependent on something that we think is there to protect us. And you, this is a perfect example. The laws were on the books. They should have done something. They didn't, which is why I've been advocating for the people who are closest to the problem, which is those guys going down into that mine. They should have the ability to turn around and say, nope, we're professionals at this. Something's hanky. We're turning around. We're getting out of there. Our safety first, your profit second.
Yes. You would think that that would be the way it should be. And it should be that way. Unfortunately, in a union mine, you have that right to say that and to refuse it to your foreman. But in a non-union mine, if you refuse it, what they usually say is, do it or there's the door. We have applications this thick that we can replace you just like that.
Yeah, it's amazing. And on a day like today, being Workers' Memorial Day, it's important to remember and understand why the numbers that you gave, which mind-blowing, are so important and why we have to continue this fight. Dave, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the information. Keep up the good work you guys are doing at the with the mine workers.
Okay, Rick, hey, I thank you for the opportunity to talk.
All righty. Dave Briggs, Region 1 organizer with the United Mine Workers of America. We're going to take a quick break. Back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back.
Con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
A recent email to me pretty well sums up the big budget hullabaloo being pushed by Tea Party Republicans. As the writer put it, remember when teachers, public employees, Planned Parenthood, NPR, and PBS crashed the stock market, wiped out half of our 401ks, took trillions in bailout money, spilled oil in the Gulf of Mexico, gave themselves billions in bonuses, and paid no taxes? Then he added, yeah, me neither. Yet, it's teachers, the middle class, the poor, the elderly, the environment, and the idea of public service that GOP Congress critters and governors want to punish for the destructive deeds of Wall Street banksters and corporate elites. For example, the GOP's widely ballyhooed budget plan doesn't just end Medicare as we know it, it ends it, period. Instead of extending this efficient and effective health care program, they would toss the elderly under the bus of insurance profiteers. Goodbye and good luck. How's this for bitter irony? Last year, Tea Party Republicans got elected to Congress by falsely claiming that Obama's universal health care program would require, quote, massive Medicare cuts. And now, those same Tea Partiers are not merely voting to cut Medicare, they're killing it. They're also trying to gut Medicaid, taking three-quarters of $1 trillion out of this essential health care program for poor families. Would this savings help reduce the deficit, as they claim? No. It would merely be redistributed to the super-rich in the form of $1 trillion in new tax giveaways. This is Jim Hightower saying the GOP budget plan shows who they are and whom they serve. As one observer says, it's a measure of just how far off the deep end Republicans have gone. That's former President Ronald Reagan's budget director speaking. And we all remember what a lefty Reagan was.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
You know, here's the thing, and it's one of the things that really gets me. You know, And talking with Dave there for a second, you know, about the idea of the mine safety and health people coming in and us relying on regulators, relying on the rules, the laws, because I do believe most working people believe in rules. We believe in laws. We abide by the rules. We really don't want to think that our employer is going to shortcut and put us in dangerous positions. But, you know, sometimes it happens. And especially when you're looking at dangerous industries like mining, like trucking, like you know, look at the Marcellus Shale stuff. Dangerous. It's going to be dangerous. There's going to be a lot of injuries. And we expect that these agencies, because we put our faith in the law, we put our faith in government to do some of these things. And they can't be anywhere, everywhere. And look, the reality is like we talked about yesterday, for a federal inspector to inspect every job site in this country, it would take something like 129 years just to visit every job site once with the number of people that we have. Which is why I'm a big fan of local empowerment. I'm a big fan of local empowerment on a number of levels. The people who are closest to the problem are the ones who fix the problem. So those people who went down to the mine, they got about halfway down, said, hey, something doesn't look right. We're turning around going back before we get ourselves into trouble. I'm in favor of that. And the only way that happens is if you've got a contract. Because the folks who don't, they're disposable. They're disposable. Anyway, on Tuesday, May 3rd, the Clear Coalition is having their rally here at the Capitol. 1 to 2 p.m. is going to be the rally. They're going to do some lobbying, I guess, after that. It's a rally for a responsible budget. It's going to be on the front steps of the Capitol right there, 3rd and State Street. So everybody, come on out. 1 o'clock on May the 3rd. That is a Tuesday. We will be there. It should be a big rally, so we're looking forward to that. I don't know if you saw this, but, you know, the whole Trump thing seems to really be flaming now. Now Trump's gotten his credit. I got the birth certificate. Now you got people like Rand Paul going, okay, well, you got the birth certificate. Now that Obama has proved he's a citizen, you prove you're a Republican. As much as I don't like Rand Paul, he is a snarky little. Anyway, terrestrial radio. I don't want to get into that trouble. Anyway, you prove you're a Republican. I'm still waiting for the tax returns. He said if Obama came out with the birth certificate, he would show his tax returns, maybe. So I'm waiting to see that. I'm waiting to see those tax returns. Talk about those bankruptcies. Maybe some of the alimony and some of the other stuff going on. That $600 billion he says he's worth, not quite so sure. Or $600 million, or whatever it is. Anyway, he's also got himself into a little bit of a ringer on a racial front. He evidently said some kind of dumb stuff to a reporter. The reporter asked a simple question, would seem kind of, you know, middle of the road. Basically, you know, saying that, you know, what you're talking about, you know, Donald, is what Obama tried to do with his stimulus package. And Trump responded to the president, look, I know you're a big Obama fan, but the president doesn't know what he's doing. And he said, well, why would you say that? Because of your question and the fact that the guy was black. So I kind of go, you know, did the man with the perfectly coiffed hair, did he have his macaca moment? And is this going to shoot him down? Again, what's amazing to me is all the people who have jumped on the Trump train. I watched this video somebody sent out where they went to a Tea Party rally and they asked a bunch of people, who are you for? I'm for Donald Trump. I don't know a damn thing about him, but I'm for him because he was on The Apprentice, which I guess shows how powerful television is as a medium to get, you know, people to do stupid things. Amazing stuff. The one thing that I do agree with Trump on, and, you know, I agree with everybody on a few things. But the one thing I absolutely do agree with Trump on is his view of China and of manufacturing. And look, you know, if he wouldn't have gone on that crazy birther thing, if he wouldn't have gone off the deep end again, you know, like the tea twizzler that he's trying to get people to think he is, I probably would have been a little bit more supportive of him, because I do think we have a manufacturing problem in this country. And I do believe that China is stealing our manufacturing jobs. Well, they're not stealing them. We've got corporations who we're allowing with our tax breaks and our subsidies to move jobs from here to there and then bring those products back as if somehow that's trade. I've always marveled at people buying American-named products, things that have been made in this country for years, and not thinking that somehow it's now made in China. You know, the washing machines and televisions and all these things that we used to make here in this country, now made somewhere else. We seem to not think that way. But an interesting report, the AP and the people over at Salon took a look at some of his stuff. You know, because he was saying, look, he had his little press conference yesterday in New Hampshire, and he basically said, look, you know, our problem's simple. The answer is very simple. Because of the fact that China so manipulates their currency, he said, it makes it more impossible for the American companies to compete. He went on to say, you see it with all of the items that you're talking about. You will see it with building products. If it continues this way, America won't have any jobs except for taking care of the elderly. Asked if he ever looked at having his Trump products manufactured in the U.S., Trump said, always do. There are a few companies that do it because they can't compete with the manipulation. He says the problem with our country is that we don't make anything anymore. China is raping this country. So a couple of people said, you know what, let's go take a look at his stores. Because evidently Trump has a couple of stores. There's one in the Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue in New York. And there are displays of the Trump clothing line at Macy's in New York's Herald Square. And what they're saying is hard-pressed to find anything made in the U.S. He has the Trump brand cotton sweater, $80. The Trump brand warm-up top, $70. Golf hats with the Trump crest, stuffed animals, leather belts. Oh, you name it, he's got it. 50 different styles and colors of ties, all made in Mexico. They're all made in China. Suits, he's got Trump suits made in Mexico and Vietnam. Dress shirts, you know, the dress shirts, those really expensive ones, 5 different styles, all very beautiful, but all made in China. All of the tie pins, all of the tie clips, all made in China. The cufflinks, made in China. In fact, not only are the tie pins, the clips, and the cufflinks all made in China, so are the little boxes that the things come in. The gold shirts that he has, his signature shirts, $70 a piece, made in Korea and Thailand. So I guess that's a little different than a little different than China. There were a few items that they said they found that were made in the U.S. Those items were the Trump chocolate bar, some books. They had some teas, you know, like local teas, you know, little green tea and some bison tea kind of stuff, like my producer loves to have, and a couple of Christmas ornaments. So you got chocolate bars, a couple of books, you know, something to drink, and a Christmas ornament. Those were what were made in the U.S. Everything else, somewhere else. And I look at this and I go, okay, Donald, you're charging $70 for a shirt you couldn't find an American manufacturer, because I know King Louis makes them, and I can get them a lot cheaper than $70. And they're high quality, some of the best shirts I own. Couldn't do that? Well, no, because you can probably get them from China for, you know, 50 cents to a buck. And then that $70, that's a nice tidy little profit. And my problem again with China is the U.S. has been having these discussions about human rights. And today they came out and said, well, talks are over, and they're deeply concerned because basically China told them to go pound salt. We don't care what you think. They think they're in the driver's seat. And we're going to continue to go, yeah, okay, just keep taking our jobs. We'll keep buying your cheap plastic crap. Sure, don't worry about it. Those jobs that used to be here, no problem. Which is why, you know, going back to the progressive budget that we talked about earlier with Congressman Raul Grijalva, in there envy the progressive caucus's people's budget. There is a Make It in America job provision. There's a bunch of good stuff in that bill. You know, indexing the minimum wage, allowing workers to organize, a lot of really good stuff in the progressive budget that's never going to see the light of day because the corporatists, the Trumps, I hate to say it, the Obamas, not going to let it happen. We're going to be stuck on this path for a while of slash and burn. We're going to be stuck on this path for a while of painful deep cuts and regression backwards, moving back towards the 19th century where you worked until you die. Because that's where the investor class wants us. That's where the wealth class wants us, subservient. The fact that we've got some security in old age drives them ballistic. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. I've got Jeff Holtzman on the line, Talk Radio News Service. Jeff, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, good. Thanks for having me.
What's going on in Washington, D.C. today?
Well, you know, Congress obviously has been out the past 2 weeks. They'll resume on Monday. But one thing that we're hearing is that we might have an idea of what's going to happen in terms of budget votes in the Senate. Harry Reid yesterday said that he would like to schedule a floor vote on the Paul Ryan budget, which passed the House. You know, it's likely that it won't pass, obviously, given the fact that the Senate's controlled by Democrats. But I think Reid wants to do it to really put Senate Republicans on record as being either for or against this thing. And Democrats are making note of the fact that, you know, when Paul Ryan introduced this budget plan, a couple weeks ago, a lot of Republicans in the Senate applauded him and said, you know, we like the plan that he's putting out, and we're glad that he's doing it. And Democrats have noted that recently Republicans in the Senate have sort of cooled a little bit to, you know, the idea of voting on this thing. So that should be interesting. Now, today, Mitch McConnell, who's the Senate Minority Leader, said that he wants to bring a vote to the floor on President Obama's original 2012 budget request, which he submitted back in February after the State of the Union address. And, of course, this is, you know, I think for all, you know, intents and purposes, a political move to do the same thing to Democrats, to put them on record as being against the president, because it's likely that, you wouldn't have hardly anybody support this thing because it's very low on specifics, but it also really doesn't include any deficit reduction proposals, and that's all anybody's talking about these days. And I think, obviously, the direction that President Obama and Democrats in Congress want to go is they want, you know, to have a final eventual vote on the deficit reduction proposal that the president put forth just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, at the end of this, both of them, both sides, they seem to be hung up on this spending cuts. And I think a big problem that we have is that we don't have enough revenue. There are a number of revenue sources out there on the table that we should be talking about before we start cutting education and cutting Social Security and cutting and destroying Medicare. There's a lot of things we should be talking about there first.
Well, certainly it's known that you have, obviously, the top 2% of income earners are still getting the tax cuts they've been getting for the past, you know, 7 or 8 years that were enacted under the Bush administration. This is something that, you know, obviously the president played a role in reauthorizing last December, but he's come out since then and said that you know, that he needs to sunset, you know, at the end of his first term in 2012. So we'll see if Democrats can figure out a way to get that done. I think Republicans have cooled to that idea. And then, you know, there are other things. Obviously, you have a lot of proposals right now, and one of them in the Senate being worked on by this so-called Gang of Six would basically do a lot of things that the President's Fiscal Commission recommended in terms of deficit reduction, including tax reform. You know, maybe not raising rates, but probably getting rid of a lot of tax expenditures, things like deductions and things like that that they say would raise a lot of revenue. So that's, you know, that could happen. And, you know, the Gang of Six is supposed to release its proposal sometime either next week or the week after. We've heard rumors that, you know, there might be some friction, some tension, you know, between the members of this group. But it's expected that they'll put forth a plan. It'll probably resemble something that the president would support.
Yeah, again, it's when you start talking about closing loopholes and closing some of that stuff, I go back to the tax reform bill of 86 where they closed a bunch of stuff, but the lobbyists got back in there and they got their special loopholes while the working people of this country got the screw job again. And I expect that to happen again. I'm fully confident that our leaders will sell out the working class once again. And you look at what's going on with the oil prices. I mean, through the roof. I mean, this is a massive wealth transfer from people who work for a living to the speculators. Not hearing much about that, but a bunch of subsidies now that we find out going to the oil companies and have been for years.
Yeah, and you know, when you talk about the topic of tax loopholes, this is something that I think Congress is going to look at fairly soon when they come back from recess. Democrats, you know, have been doing a pretty intense job all week of calling on Republicans to support ending these tax subsidies for oil companies. And, you know, of course, the big news of today was the fact that ExxonMobil announced that it, you know, took in almost $11 billion worth of profits in the first quarter of the year, which in this economy is pretty darn good.
Yep.
So a lot of legislators are saying they don't need these, you know, this corporate welfare. They don't need these handouts. Democrats estimate that if you end these subsidies, you could generate somewhere around $45 billion over the next 10 years. Hopefully that would be used toward deficit reduction. Now, it's interesting because this issue might actually have some bipartisan traction. Paul Ryan, during a town hall today, said that he, too, would favor getting rid of these tax subsidies for oil companies. And he, you know, referred to it as corporate welfare. He said it's in his budget plan to end things like this. And to let the market figure it out. So I think that the two parties are probably taking different paths in terms of their, you know, philosophy on these tax subsidies for oil companies. Nonetheless, it looks like it's something that, you know, might have a decent chance of passing, you know, when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I sure hope so. And look at what's going on with this horrible weather that we've had the last couple of days. Alabama is just pretty much wiped out from what I've been seeing, the reports I've been seeing. How are we going to help them when we have to cut the budget? We have to cut the deficits. We can't deficit spend. How do we help them?
Yeah, I think that, you know, obviously, you know, you've seen the tornadoes. There have been 164 reported over the last couple days. It's just crazy. And Alabama certainly bore the brunt of that. I think there have been over 130 deaths reported so far in the state by the state's government. And the president will be down there tomorrow. He'll stop in Alabama, meet with the governor and other local officials, as well as some of the families who have been victimized by the tornadoes, before he, you know, makes his way to Cape Canaveral for the shuttle launch. But one of the things is, in terms of aid, the president obviously declared an emergency in Alabama, which means that, you know, the federal government can provide assistance to state and local governments and spend money, and that comes out of, you know, mandatory spending. That money is fairly protected. You know, so, you know, the things that they've cut in terms of their, you know, the Republican budget, you're looking at foreign aid and things like that would probably go down. But in terms of the federal government being able to assist, you know, having FEMA assist these local governments, that looks to be pretty safe.
No, I understand that, but where are we going to borrow the money for that? Because we're broke. I'm told we're broke. I keep hearing every day we're broke. We're just broke. We can't do anything. We're a helpless country. We're hopeless.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's certainly, there's been a lot of talk, and, you know, some of it is it's the political season, and both parties, frankly, are using, you know, the debt and the deficit to try and score points over the other. And I think that, you know, the perfect example of that has been the debate surrounding the debt ceiling vote,
yep.
Which, you know, has really, in my recent memory, never been politicized as heavy as it has been this year.
Oh, this is going to be an interesting fight. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service, appreciate your time.
Thanks, Rick. Take care.
All righty. Talk to you later. You know, here's the thing. You know, here in this area, we see that the good folks over at Hypocrisy Watch have come up with some interesting takes on what our governor has been doing. Less than 2 weeks before giving his budget address, our good governor contributed some $5,000 to the Senate State Republicans, to their campaign committee. And, you know, according to the folks at Hypocrisy Watch, they're left guessing on whether corporate was trying to, you know, just help the GOP win the Berks County special election, or just looking for a little goodwill. Either way, it didn't work. The Republican state Senate candidate Corbett campaigned for lost after putting his full support behind the governor's plan to cut education funding in the state budget. Because remember, he ran on that. Well, you know, it's a good thing. I'm all in favor of it. Looking forward to it. They go on to say, and the state Senate has made a point of showing that it's independent from Tom Corbett on everything from budget to vouchers, but unfortunately for the governor, we doubt he'll have much trouble refilling those campaign coffers with drilling industry cash when the time comes. Because you look at what's going on, the drillers, they're running this place. We are going to be the West Virginia of natural gas, where they're going to run what's going on here. I'm just wondering who our Don Blankenship is going to be. I'm wondering who that figure, that character is going to be, that is going to be the dominant figure in the industry. Also, the people at Hypocrisy Watch said the front page headline says it all, massive school cuts. And there's a sign of where Governor Corbett wants to take our public schools, backwards. For Philadelphia, which has doubled the number of students who are on grade level in reading and math over the last decade, full-day kindergarten has been a cornerstone of school reform since the 1990s, but no longer, and you can thank Governor Tom Corbett for that, his decision to gut public education, $1.1 billion from the state's K-12 education budget, in addition to making deep cuts in other core education services and eliminating nearly 1,300 teachers. Philadelphia announced yesterday that it has to end full-day kindergarten. Note that the governor likes to say that his budget doesn't actually cut funding for education. So I look at this, and you just cut kindergarten, you eliminated 1,300 teachers. Gee, I'm not quite getting where your budget isn't harming education. Not getting that at all. And speaking of the war on public schools, Senator Jeff Pakola, who received $50,000 from the pro-voucher Student First PAC, was pleased to announce yesterday that he and the good governor Well, they've come up with a backroom deal. They've shaken hands. They've come big hugs and kisses and all of that stuff. They're going to create a taxpayer-funded private school voucher bill. The folks at Hypocrisy Watch say they're not so sure that a majority of senators or pretty much anyone in the GOP-controlled House is ready to sign on. But according to the Allentown Morning Call, their blog, the agreement includes delaying the huge costs by 1 year and giving the governor sole control over who sits on the new Education Opportunity Board. So let's see. The compromise plan still spends a ton of our money. It increases our property taxes. It takes resources away from our public schools. There's no accountability, and it gives complete unfettered control to the governor without accountability from anybody else. Nobody else has a say, just the governor. I guess that sounds like a great deal if you live in a place like Russia, like how the Soviet Union used to be, or China. Our guy. Kind of makes you wonder. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
Or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
The Republican-controlled Oklahoma House of Representatives, they're at it again. They have proposed a constitutional amendment that would eliminate affirmative action in state government. The official GOP reasoning is that, you gotta love it, is that while discrimination exists, I don't think affirmative action has been as successful as we like to believe, said the bill's sponsor, Representative T. Debbie Shannon. But perpetual extremist state Representative Sally Kern, she had a little different argument. Just a little something for her. She said that minorities earn less money than white people because they don't work as hard and they have less incentive. She said, we have a high percentage of blacks in prison, and that's tragic. But are they in prison just because they're black or because they don't want to study as hard in school? I've taught school, and I saw a lot of people of color who didn't study hard because they said government would take care of them. Kern said women earn less than men because, quote, they tend to spend more time at home with their families. Isn't that what we want, kind of? Kern, who has a long history of bizarre, outlandish positions from saying that homosexuality is more dangerous than terrorism to introducing legislation to force teachers to question evolution. Her bigoted comments reflect a disturbing trend among even mainstream conservatives to blame valuable social safety net programs for creating a culture of dependency or even slavery. And, you know, again, you know, you need to have this. What I find interesting with this whole thing is that, you know, you got folks who you know, they're struggling right now. And people like Kern give people who are struggling someone to look back at and say, well, you know, it's their fault. You know, we wouldn't have all these problems if we didn't have all these affirmative action programs. I could get those jobs because those minorities, they're taking my job. I got to be honest with you. I have applied for a lot of jobs in my life. And I don't think I've ever lost a job because I was white. I know I've gotten a couple because I was white. I know that. But I don't think I've ever lost one because of that. And I've yet to find anybody who can verify to me that they got passed over because they were the best qualified candidate. But there was that black man there who was just had to fill that quota. I've yet to find that and document it. Now I remember I did apply for a job this back in the late 80s, early 90s. I was applying for a job with a trucking company and I was sitting there with a black guy and we were, you know, kind of chatting, you know, before the interview, and I went in, did my interview, and I did a horrible job. I wouldn't have hired me. Argumentative, and I was just not nose kid. What did I know? And this guy that I had met out in the lobby had worked in the industry, you know, 10 years, long resume, well qualified. You know, I would have hired him. I ended up getting the job. He didn't. And I always wondered why. And I always thought part of it was, you know, guy behind the desk didn't seem too happy when we walked out and he saw the other guy was still there. It was a weird kind of moment. But this whole argument, this whole finger pointing, this whole really distraction from what is really important to me is interesting, because we allow these things to go on. We allow this to happen, like this whole thing with the TSA. Now, look, I've taken the position right from the beginning, and I stand by my position. I am firm in my position. I stand erect on my position. That every person who flies, for safety purposes, of course, should fly naked. We would have no problems then. We wouldn't have all of these porno scanners. We wouldn't have all of these problems at the screening ports, such as this former Miss USA. She said that the Transportation Safety Authority violated her, according to UPI, in a full body pat down because she refused to go through the scanner somewhere in Dallas. Her name is Susie Castillo. She was Miss USA in 2003. Now this female TSA, and who I feel sorry for. I feel sorry for these TSOs, these security officers. I do, and I've said that from the beginning. I wouldn't want to be in their position. They were the ones screwed in this whole position. It was policy, and this thing is still policy by the Transportation Safety Administration. Now, understand all of that hoopla, all of this kind of uproar. This woman said she touched my private parts 4 times. She actually touched me there. That's part of the pat down. It's part of it. When a cop takes you into custody, part of the pat down. Wants to make sure you don't have a weapon. If we're going to do this kind of stuff, this is what happens. You have the choice not to fly, of course. But here's my problem with this whole TSA thing. I said from the very beginning that this was not about the policy, the pat-downs. It was not about the scanners. This was about union busting. This was about beating up on the workers. And it is. It still is. They have put these people in an untenable position. They've given them a policy that is bad policy. And they've told them, you go out there like professionals and you do what you're supposed to do and do what we tell you. So they're the ones caught in the middle. Do you think this woman who patted the former Miss USA down, do you think she liked doing it? I know I probably would have liked it. But, you know, I've asked my wife. She wouldn't be all that thrilled with patting someone down. I think for different reasons I would probably like it. But, you know, my wife's like, nah, I'm not so interested in that. And I think that's kind of how it is. They don't want to do this. It's the job, though. It's what has been the policy that has been handed down. You don't like it, change the policy. And I say we just change the policy to where no carry-ons, no luggage onto the plane. Everything has to go through checking. You carry nothing on. Nothing comes with you. No carry-ons, no iPods, no laptops, no cell phones, nothing. You come on, nothing. Makes things real easy to get through the scanner there. But we don't think that way. We think, oh, I have all these rights. And I've been hearing this about the Marcellus Shale thing. You know, one of the calls that came into the curmudgeon said, well, you know, did anyone sue the movie Gasland for being wrong? Did the natural gas people sue him? And the curmudgeon guy said, well, they have the right to free speech. And again, showing how little they understand. You have the right to free speech when it's you and your government. If I put out something about you, or you put out something about me, I can sue you for libel. It's not free speech. And that's what I think a lot of folks forget, that, you know, whatever I say about the natural gas industry, it better be true, or they're going to come down upon you. So you don't have unlimited free speech against whoever you want. And that's what I find quite interesting as we move forward in this whole discussion, especially about the Marcellus Shale. Because there's going to be a lot of conversation here. And the folks who put on the protest yesterday, I think, did a fantastic job. And I'm hoping there are more of them, because we need to draw attention to this stuff. Because it's like the foxes guarding the hen house. Of the 30 people on this Marcellus Shale Advisory Commission, 14 of them are from the industry. And you look at the number of violations that have come out of these 14 people who were on the commission, of the violations handed out, and there haven't been an awful lot handed out by the EPA, 42% of them went to people who, the companies that are represented on the governor's board. So 42% of them go to these folks. These are the people Corbett chose to put on this advisory panel. I wonder how many labor people are on that panel. I wonder how many environmental people are on that panel. It's mostly corporatists. How can we maximize profit? Anyway, I want to thank all of our guests as we wrap things up. Raul Grijalva, co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. Of course, Jim Byrne, the chairman of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party, and Professor Volz from the University of Pittsburgh, as well as our good friend Dave from the United Mine Workers. I want to thank you for being here. Again, if you missed any portion of the program, go to therickSmithShow.com. The podcast is there for your entertainment, your convenience, your enjoyment. And if you want to contact me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. I look forward to having you back here again tomorrow night. We'll see you.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the Buddha sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
or two stone. If you're living underneath the bridge, man, all roads lead to home. I got a hidden flask, I'm paid in cash, got a cross above my bed. You know, I hitchhiked from Chicago, and a man walks up and said, this is a Union Town, all down the line. This is